go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 21st day of July 2023. 10 days remain in the month of July. Summer is running past us at breakneck speed. And it's Friday on the front porch. Yes, here in about an hour, we will go over the river and through the woods to the old Holler Tree where we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday to sort of wrap up all the issues of the week. There's a button at the top of headon.live. If you don't do Skype, you can use the button there, and it'll take you into the group anyway, even if you're not particularly Skypey. There's also, of course, the Stress Line, named in honor of our dear and departed friend Bill Mr. Stress Miller. And that number, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. If you just absolutely, positively cannot use the button or Skype on its own on your machine, well, use that number to join in the conversation. Preferably without Bluetooth, preferably not on speaker, because that seems to be a real problem for some reason or another. Hi, I'm Robin, and we will be, I think, busy this evening, because there's... Sometimes it feels like it's one long Moran Monday, one long Titanic Tuesday, because the overarching theme of this program, I think, is Jesus H. Christ, maggots is so stupid. Because they are. Because they are. But that being said, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And as such, we say thank you to our 21st day of the month subscribers. That means thank you ever so kindly to Harold, President and CEO of Sochtris, the secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you, Harold. Harold is our lone subscriber for the 21st day of the month. He used to have company, but it would be great if someone would step in there and be a neighbor to Harold. If you'd like to be a subscriber, just go to headon.live and put... $10 in the box there and click make this a recurring monthly donation or whatever it is it says. And when you do that, well, every blessed month you're going to put yourself out a dime and 4 pennies for every hour of programming that comes to you. Yeah. Every program itself is going to be almost of equal cost as a little less than a half a pack of, say, Wrigley's Double Mint Gum. Double your pleasure, double your fun here at the Horn, right? I don't even know if you can get a White Castle. I don't know if you could get a half of a White Castle without cheese for what you're spending on one episode of this program. You certainly couldn't buy a song on Amazon Music. Well, I mean, nobody buys songs anymore now that we have subscriptions, do they? But at any rate, you can keep up with the news of the day, culture war stuff, hilarious aspects and manifestations of right-wing intellect, all right there, coming to you on your phone or your computer, through your headphones, what have you. And at present, and it gives me no joy to say this, the fundraising hole is $2,250. It would genuinely be a Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle if we could catch up with that. That means that 7 full broadcast days plus, that means all this week, all the way to Monday, last Friday, and last Thursday, and $150 of last Wednesday remains unfunded. So if you can help, please do. Happy birthday. Happy birthday goes out to our dear friend Tracy. I talked to her earlier today. She's celebrating by going to the Barbie movie and thereby making little Ben, my dry wife Shapiro, cry. And she's going to Cheesecake Factory because, well, you get a free piece of cheesecake on your birthday at Cheesecake Factory. I wish we had a nearby Cheesecake Factory. The last time I was at Cheesecake Factory was, dear God, November of 2021. December of 2021. Didn't even go there. Had it door-dashed in. And I told her what we had way back then, and it was the key lime mango cheesecake. And she told me today, definitely getting the mango key lime cheesecake. Enjoy, Tracy, and happy birthday, and many happy returns, sis. And thank you, Claire, across the pond in the UK, for getting us started this evening. So that takes our fundraising goal down to $2,215. So that's a great start. Thank you. Thank you, Claire. And, I'm going to be on the road this weekend again. This is either going to be the next to last or next to last trip down to East Tennistan. And tomorrow is going to be a little bit emotional because tomorrow we take the babies. And when I drop my daughter-in-law and my granddaughters off, when I come home, I'll come home in an empty car. And my granddaughters will no longer be running around this old house. And it will be much more quiet. Okay. I have a dispatch from Joey. Per the conversation from the porch last Friday concerning San Francisco, it's not widely known of the recent woes of the city by the bay. However, many retail business owners in San Francisco state their traffic is down 30% from pre-pandemic times. Empty storefronts can be seen all over the city as San Francisco's become the perfect example of what downtowns are dealing with during these difficult times. I'm warning you in advance, Joey, do not get on the wrong side of Matt in San Francisco. Because Matt does not like hearing his beloved city disparaged. And I love that city, too. And as Matt told me earlier today, I got a note from Matt earlier with the announcement of the passing at 96 years old of Tony Bennett. Matt said, if you're a native of San Francisco with Italian heritage, you were required to love Tony Bennett, which, given his talent, was an easy assignment. We will forever take care of his heart. And I got a bit misty with that note. I left my heart in San Francisco. Yeah. Good on you, Matt. And when I saw the news of Tony Bennett's passing, that was the first thing that went through my mind was, I left my heart in San Francisco. But anyway, back to Joey. San Francisco has become the perfect example of what downtowns are dealing with during these difficult times and exactly what downtowns should not look like, with crime-ridden vacant areas in various stages of decay. Since the pandemic struck, so many workers, especially tech workers, are staying home while shopping and dining in their local neighborhoods. San Francisco's had the worst recovery by all measures of any city in the country, as they barely reached 33% of 2019 economic activity. In simple terms, the city of San Francisco is down two-thirds or 66% of where it was this time in 2019 with economic activity. Well, yeah, Junior weighs in. I hear London calling.
Well, yes, Junior, London Calling is a wonderful song from the eponymously named album by The Clash that detailed many ways that the world could end, including the coming of an ice age due to global warming, famine, and war. One of the references in the song speaks of a nuclear era where the wheat is growing thin. I find that frightening when I think of Russia being the world's largest exporter of wheat and the fact that Putin has access to nukes. Yesterday, July the 20th in 1944, members of the German army tried to kill Hitler with a bomb planted in a suitcase. Hopefully, somebody soon will put an end to Putin before he puts an end to the world.
Yeah, maybe a Kremlin gremlin can escort him to a balcony where he can accidentally on purpose take a fall, because we really need to wheat out a real bad person in this world today. Wheat out. Junior! Junior! Very tired the llama is. Joey 2 the kangaroo corrects Giraffe. Oh, no, I think Junior was referring to the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, with his mention of London Calling. Yes, that's correct, Joey 2. Well, Junior was referring to the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed. Besides the economy going into a tailspin, there's a massive housing crisis in the city, leaving nearly 4,400 people without shelter, and many thousands more are considered homeless.
Yeah, and I know how the story's going to end, so stay tuned to see if Mayor London bridges the gap to provide shelter for the homeless.
You know, that's not exactly a... Look, let's remember this. Things like homelessness and poverty, hunger, are not accidents. They are choices we make. And not so much we, as in you and I, given the choice. If someone said, hey, Robin, would you like there to be homeless people? My answer would be no. I think everybody should have a roof over their head when they go to sleep at night. These are choices corporations make. These are choices that business, mostly men, make when they manipulate the economy and manipulate the politics and manipulate services, manipulate the price of real estate. When I was becoming an adult, I had my very own apartment in Atlanta, Georgia, where I lived while I worked at CNN. And we're talking about age 24? And something like that is out of reach for so many young people entering the workforce today. Something as simple as a fucking apartment is out of reach. And that's not the worker's fault. And it's not a mayor's fault. It's the fact that we do not build affordable housing. We don't give a damn if people have anywhere to live. We don't care if people live on the streets and starve to death. I saw a job posting for, it was some sort of IT job or some such, and it said master's degree preferred, starting salary $15.29 an hour. And companies are having a hard time getting people to fill those positions. Gee, Mr. makes $1 billion a year, CEO. I wonder why. You've got airline employees on strike. You've got writers and actors on strike. You've got UPS about to go on strike. I saw one reference to the potential UPS strike of something on the order of $7 billion to the economy. Going poof. And that's the workers' fault. How? Because they're being worked to death while the CEOs pile up the money and say harumph to each other and call it work. Well, back to Joey. Considering that many office buildings are now vacant along with the horrible economy, several city officials have advised the mayor to convert office space into housing and hire more police so visitors will have a sense of safety. Downtown housing has been very successful in cities such as Salt Lake, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and New York. Cities such as Pittsburgh and New York have offered sizable tax breaks to developers to spur the conversions from offices to housing. With this in mind, the mayor and the city of San Francisco came up with a coalition for the homeless and eventually formed a group called CART, Compassionate Alternative Response Team, which would help the homeless to utilize mental health and other services by providing the homeless with transportation to the city facilities. The funding for this project was to come from the budget of the San Francisco Police Department during the Defund the Police debate after the murder of George Floyd at the hands of the police. The plan was to divert $120 million from the SFPD budget. The CART program only needed 2.75 of the $120 million. But unfortunately, the mayor let the money sit unspent for over a year and then even refused to acknowledge CART publicly. Mayor Breed, the woman who was raised in one of the worst neighborhoods in San Francisco, an area known as the Western Addition part of San Francisco, which is still today not a safe area, yes, has insisted to hire a group that reminds people more of a Nazi squad or SS Gestapo unit to deal with the homeless. This goon squad is known as the Urban Alchemy. I don't know about any of this. Urban Alchemy is considered a private security force that goes around the city and attempts to force the homeless into encampments and shelters. There have been numerous complaints about UA's out tactics, which involve bullying the unhoused into the encampments, including violence and theft from the unhoused. Basically, it appears Mayor Breed has employed Urban Alchemy to perform the thuggery tactics that the police formerly utilized on the homeless, but this way the SFPD doesn't have to get involved and end up with a black eye for the blue. Instead of having some of these vacant skyscrapers potentially providing housing for the homeless, Mayor Breed would just rather round up the homeless and put them in a tent. Shame on you, Mayor Breed. You are a dino, and obviously you don't care about the city.
Mayor Breed, you've fallen down on the job as mayor of your city just like that London Bridge has fallen down many times.
And, Giraffe closes things.
Well, it appears that Marjorie Taylor Greene, in her attempts to insult and tear down the president, actually built him up with a congressional speech that touted how Joe Biden has successfully implemented programs that resemble the accomplishments of FDR and LBJ.
Actually, that was a speech at Toilet Paper Action, TP Action.
She's so stupid, she did not realize that she provided a wonderful commercial for the Democrats next fall or even sooner.
It's already running.
What Marjorie does not realize is the fact that her district in the most northwestern part of Georgia was supplied water, electricity, and phone lines thanks to great social programs invoked by FDR, with one particular being TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority. Yes, MTG's district in Georgia can directly thank FDR for things such as running water, power lines, and sewer systems.
Well, it looks like Joey's Jr. is going to have the last word.
You were speaking of Tennessee and Marjorie Taylor Greene. What do they have in common? Well, today is the anniversary of the famous Scopes monkey trial, where John T. Scopes was found guilty of teaching Darwin's theory of evolution in the southeastern city of Dayton, Tennessee, 98 years ago. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is a clear example of Darwin's theory, as she looks and acts like a fucking baboon. Junior, you're not wrong, but we're going to have to talk about your language. This has been Joey's Journal for a Friday on the Front Porch, the 21st of July, with Giraffe asking the question, if Trump supposedly built this great wall to keep the Mexicans out of this country, then why is Governor Asshole Abbott of Texas having to place razor wire barrels in the Rio Grande River to keep the Mexicans and other migrants out, asylum seekers and the like? Good question, Giraffe. Of course, they say it's to discourage drug smuggling.
Fentanyl! Mexican fentanyl from China!
But no, it's not. A razor wire wrapped barrel has never stopped a single parcel of fentanyl. Mm-mm. So, thank you, Joey. There is a $25 London Bridge challenge on the table. And hopefully that will get met. We got a couple of challenges on the table. If we can raise $300, a kind internet friend will provide a matching $300, a Tracy's birthday one-for-one doubling challenge, and that would get us down to 1615. If we can just raise $300, 10 at 30, 30 at 10, etc., 1 at 300, 2 at 150, 3 at 100, 6 at 50, 12 at 25. Deciphering. But thank you. Thank you so much, kind internet friend. And that being the case, well, other things to go into today. I mentioned yesterday that when we came back to, you know, this is just let's see, we're started. Thank you, Ralphs, getting us started on Tracy's birthday challenge. Happy birthday, Tracy challenge. And so there's $275 to go on that now. Some stories of greater moment than others. Toward the end of the program yesterday, I mentioned the lawsuit taking place in Texas. It is a lawsuit of great moment. 13 women and two OBGYNs are suing the state of Texas, and they are demanding that a judge actually defines what constitutes a medical emergency under the state's abortion laws, because the hateful, onerous, odious abortion law deliberately rendered the definition of medical emergency so vague as to keep doctors from being proactive in the case of a woman with a non-viable pregnancy or a problem pregnancy in which her life is at hazard. The 2 days of hearings started on the 19th and completed yesterday. One woman, Samantha Cassiano, testified about her experience. She was 20 weeks along when her baby was diagnosed with anencephaly. Simply put, anencephaly is a baby that develops without parts of its brain and its skull. When her obstetrician diagnosed Samantha Cassiano and her baby, the doctor provided her with information about funeral homes. Not where to go to have the pregnancy terminated, both for the good of her and of the baby. Thank God she wasn't in Ron Monkey Up DeClantis's Florida, though, because if the baby had been born and survived, it wouldn't have. But hypothetically, if it would have, the state of Florida would have stuffed the baby in a nursing home where negligent caregivers would have let the baby lie in its own filth and not cleaned necessary feeding tubes and tracheostomies and the like. Who am I kidding? It probably goes on in Texas, too. Because there's no big dollars in taking care of the children that Republicans insist on being born, even though that life is a living hell. So while she was on the stand, Samantha Cassiano read the doctor's note. The note said that her pregnancy was high risk. And as she got deeper into her testimony, she cried harder still, and eventually was crying so hard she threw up while testifying, and the judge had to call for a recess. And when she came back on the stand, she patiently explained to the court that what had happened to her was that the act of describing the hell through which she lived had triggered her. I know. The maggots get such a jolly out of saying, "Oh, look, she's triggered. She needs a safe space." But Samantha Cassiano said, "It just makes my body remember and it just reacts." She went on to tell the court that she considered going to a non-misogynistic state for an abortion. But she said she was afraid that if she did, she would either lose her job or face some level of punishment, either from her employer or from the state itself. Speaking directly to the court, she said, "I felt like I was imprisoned in my own body." And, of course, that has her fears are founded. The state of Nebraska-stan has sent a woman to jail a teenager. The state of Nebraska has sent a teenage girl to jail for 90 days upon conviction of having taken abortion-inducing medication too late, exercising agency over her own body. And the vicious woman, women-hating, foul, vile maggots in that state are perfectly okay with it. Well, she deserved it! So So she's going to have a criminal record for doing nothing more than attending to her needs. These pitiless, merciless... How did these monsters ever reach adulthood? But there they were. As for Samantha Cassiano, she eventually went into early labor, and her baby died 4 hours later. Speaking to the court, she said, "I now have a psychiatrist. I now vomit a lot more. I've never vomited before like that, ever before my pregnancy. My body's never reacted that way." Two other women testified along with Samantha Cassiano, Amanda Zarosky, and Ashley Brandt. Zarosky is the lead plaintiff. She almost died from sepsis after being prevented from having an abortion when her water broke at 18 weeks. They let her get as near death as possible. Ashley Brandt had to go to Colorado from Texas, from Dallas. She was carrying twins, one of which was not viable. The non-viable fetus had acrania. Again, a case of the cranium not developing. And the longer it remained inside her, the more likely it became that her healthy baby would die. She said she would have had to give birth to an identical version of her daughter without a skull and without a brain and hold her until she died. And Dr. Damla Karsan, an OBGYN, said she honestly had no idea how to interpret the Texas law abortion statute. That was all on the 19th. More came in the hearing yesterday. And this is what the Republicans wanted. This is what the Republicans yearned for. This is what the Republicans ached for from 1973 to 2022. 49 years. They waited and they ached and they yearned and they desired and they dreamed of a day when women with dying babies inside them would wait at death's door and perhaps themselves die so that Jesus would be happy. Somehow I don't think the real Jesus would be happy about that. At least I hope not. But after all, it's a case of, "Dear Jesus, please save me from your followers," isn't it? Monstrosities. Hey, Christopher, thank you. Christopher says, kickstart on those challenges. And so we are now down to $255 to go on the Happy Birthday Tracy Challenge. Thank you so much, Christopher. Bringing this in, bringing down the fundraising hole, at least it provides some hope that maybe we could be working on a Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle. Oh, Squeaky, thank you so much. Squeaky just finished off both challenges. And so now a real, live, honest-to-goodness, Friday on the Front Porch community-made miracle is within reach. And we are down to, well, let's see. And Joey's challenge is met, the London Bridge Challenge. So that means we've gone from 2350 to 1600 even. And that means that we are funded for all but $100 of last Friday, and we can go to work on this Friday, or this entire week. So thank you. Thank you, Squeaky. Squeaky, you made such a difference. I appreciate it so very much. If there was some way to get caught up, it would be amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. John in Central PA, subject line abortion. They said they wouldn't punish women. They lied. And then this. Did you know the state of Alabama is ignoring the Supreme Court ruling on their congressional maps? Why the fuck can't we do the same to protect women? Well, this is going to take a minute. And some of this is purely a matter of my opinion, as opposed to something resembling fact. But I said, when the case came down earlier this summer, I said that the Supreme Court gave that victory to voting rights proponents in regard to Alabama's relentless and quite obvious gerrymandering to weaken the voting power of black people in Alabama, because they knew it didn't matter. I think they knew that Alabama would thumb their nose at them. They knew what kind of maggots inhabit state government in Alabama. And they ultimately knew that they were powerless to enforce it. Old Balls and Strikes, I'm guessing, surmised in his own right that Joe Biden would never send the National Guard to Alabama to how does the National Guard redistrict a state? They did what they could. They got their victory, but Alabama, probably as well as any other state, or perhaps more so, remembers the words of Andrew Jackson when Andrew Jackson went about the business of his indigenous genocide. With the Indian Removal Act in the 19th century, the Supreme Court of the United States, led by Justice John Marshall, told Andrew Jackson that his genocidal piece of legislation was unconstitutional, and did so in no uncertain terms. To which Andrew Jackson, a monster, said, "Mr. Marshall has issued his ruling. Now let him enforce it." Which, of course, he couldn't. He had no means, no mechanism of enforcing it. What was he going to do? Send the U.S. Marshals to line up against Jackson's army? And so the genocide was on. Cherokee people, Creek, Muscogee people, Chickasaw people, Choctaw people were all rounded up and marched on what became known as the Trail of Tears off to godforsaken Oklahoma. If you've ever seen the lush and green forests of Alabama and Mississippi, if you've ever seen the short grass prairies there, you know that being sent to Oklahoma was a living hell. Forests that teemed with wildlife, as good a life as a human being could possibly have. Not so much in Oklahoma, Stan. And the Supreme Court knew this, and Alabama knew this. And Alabama, and I'm glad you reminded me, John. Because this was in the stack. After the Supreme Court's decision, the Alabama legislature went into special session. And, well, they drew a new map. Only hours before the deadline to get it done. And lo and behold, that map still has only one majority black district and a second majority that is 40% black. You know, two-fifths, not even the full three that's in the Constitution. Representative Chris Englund, a Democrat from Tuscaloosa, said there was never any intent in this building to comply with the court order. There was never any intent in this building to comply with the Voting Rights Act. All they did was set it up to bring another Voting Rights Act challenge. Because that just buys more time for the 2024 election. Because you see, where before I'd said, Alabama's going to stay red. It's not going to come to their senses. Places like Alabama, you have to burn some sense into them. We're fresh out of General Sherman's. And so if this continues, then the map that they have will be the map that they use in 2024, which is of vital, critical importance, because, well, it does matter more than previously thought, because Kevers McCarthy, the man with a spine of silly putty, whose testicles reside in an old mason jar in the back of marginal trailer queen's freezer, well, things could go really shitty for him really easily. I think I remarked upon this in the last program or so. If, for instance, New Yorkers were to come to their senses in those districts where, well, a Democrat named Sean Maloney helped make matters worse by thinking more highly of himself than the electorate did, giving New York more Republican seats that should never have been Republican. If New York comes to their senses, and if Alabama were to have one more member of Congress who was a Democrat from a majority black district to stand there and side by side with suddenly forgotten her name. I've been in her office a number of times, but she is the one African American, the one Democrat representing a district in Alabama. But that could erase his majority, if everything else stays the same. And so it matters. And so it became, the maggots in Alabama understood that they, by God, had to make sure that they did not adhere to the court's order, and that those other districts remained firmly in maggot paws. Other stuff? Welcome to climate change. And you wonder how much impact this is going to have on things like drug supplies. National Weather Service said that the tornado that ripped through a Pfizer plant in Nash County, North Carolina, stand about 45 miles northeast of Raleigh Wednesday, touched down west of Dorchester, crossed I-95 into an area north of Rocky Mountain, blew the living bejesus out of the Pfizer plant. 4 people were injured, and it was at least, mind you, an EF2. The Pfizer plant looks like it was stepped on by a giant. Terry Sewell, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much, sir. Ralphs serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Alabama Democratic Congressional Delegation Research Department. Terry Sewell, thank you. Knew it started with a T. Power lines were downed, gas leak, severe damage. And, of course, the federal government will be there with some degree of relief. I wonder why Jesus did that to them. I don't know. They're so pious. And some today in January 6th news. Well, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, the fascist dictator of Florida, is telling the world where he stands because he knows whose votes he has to have if he wants the Republican nomination. Monkey Up now says, and he said it today, saying January 6th was not an insurrection. These people that were there to attend a rally and then they were there to protest. Now, it devolved into a riot, but the idea that this was a plan to somehow overthrow the government of the United States is not true. And it's something that the media has spun up just to try basically, you know, get as much mileage out of it and use it for partisan and for political aims. He's a fuck-up. And much more of this, and Harvard's going to want their degree back. Because, among other things, there are at least 95 Department of Justice prosecutions that had weapons charges attached to them. That's just the number of weapons charges prosecutions. And in a hole, he continued digging.
So I know there were a lot of people that were there who were just there, and they didn't have any designs on doing anything. And so we just have to be honest about it. If somebody's honestly doing an insurrection against the U.S. government, then prove that that's the case, and I'd be happy to accept it. This fucker is a lawyer, remember? This fucker was a JAG lawyer at Guantanamo who tortured prisoners there.
So, you know, niceties like laws against torture don't matter much to him. Apparently neither do laws against sedition.
But all you're showing me is that there were a lot of protesters there, and it ended up evolving, you know, in ways that was
Wait, something's evolving? Evolving? The governor, the fascist dictator of Florida said something was evolving? Quel horreur!
And it was unfortunate, of course.
Yeah, unfortunate. You know, when people die,
it's unfortunate.
But to say that they were auditioning is just wrong. And this has been something he's been braying for some time now. of course, the facts prove different. We have another new charge in January 6th news. Matthew Brackley of Maine has been arrested, charged with assaulting law enforcement officers during the terrorist attack of January 6, 2021. Matthew Brackley is noteworthy because Matthew Brackley had actually run for state senate as a maggot in Maine and tried to win the seat incumbently held by Senator Eloise Vitelli in 2022. He's been arrested for assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers and civil disorder because he went from all the way from Maine. All he had to do was, you know, as is the case with all of these morons, all he had to do was stay the hell home, live in peace, be happy. But no. And it's not an it's no simple, you know. There's a lot of highway between Maine and Washington, D.C., and he went all the way from Maine to Washington, D.C. to attend the Stop the Steal insurrection pre-party. According to the prosecution, after the rally, Brackley walked to the U.S. Capitol, arriving on the West Lawn about 1:40 p.m., where a large crowd had gathered. He stood in the crowd near the lower west terrace, where a police line had formed to keep people from advancing towards the Capitol. Brackley then approached a set of stairs underneath the scaffolding erected to construct the inaugural stage. Soon rioters began to climb onto the scaffolding and tore up the white tarp covering it, giving Brackley and others greater access to the stairs. Brackley and other rioters then flooded the... Oh, prosecutors. Brackley and others... Other... terrorists then flooded the stairs and advanced toward the Capitol. Brackley entered the U.S. Capitol via the Senate wing doors at approximately 2:23 p.m., only 10 minutes after they were first breached. Brackley then made his way to the crypt, where a large group of rioters had assembled and were pushing against police lines. The rioters then pushed past police and further into the crypt. His campaign website described him as a Maine Maritime Academy graduate whose approach would have been to have respectful, thoughtful conversations on the issues. And once he was at the Capitol, he led a group that pushed through police officers several times before ultimately being dispersed by chemical spray and exiting.
It was just a peaceful protest by some tourists, says Monkey Up DeClantis.
Oh, and thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs said that she'd kick in another $25 if the challenge was met. It was, in fact, met. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much for being there. Oh, and I mentioned the children who were neglected in Florida. Well, this isn't Florida, but my God, this is a horror. This is New Jersey. Children with special needs deserve an education commensurate with their needs. And so They ride to school on the bus. Soon, my precious little granddaughter will take her first bus ride. And I hope she's excited and thrilled at the prospect of school. Well, didn't quite work out for 6-year-old Fajir Williams. She had to have help getting on and off the bus and had to have a wheelchair. And the bus had a monitor on it, a woman named Amanda Davila. She got little Fajir Williams secured in her chair and got the restraint harness on her. And the bus hit some bumps in the road. And the little six-year-old slumped in her wheelchair. And the harness strangled her. That's why a bus monitor is there, in case something like that happens, so that she can render aid immediately and keep anything bad from happening. But Amanda Davila, well, no. She was clueless, because while Fajira Williams, the six-year-old, was in the back of the bus, Amanda Davila was in the front, had her earbuds in, and was flipping through her phone and had no idea that her little charge was dying in the back. And when they got the bus to the school, they went, oh, well, I'll be darned. Little six-year-old Fajira is dead. They rushed her to the hospital. And at the hospital, they pronounced the child dead. That poor baby. Those poor parents. What was so goddamned important that the woman charged with having to do nothing more complicated than to make sure the little girl was safe was so wrapped up on her phone with her earbuds in so she couldn't hear the child or the children? School buses are noisy, but it is contrary to New Jersey rules and regulations. And so Amanda Davila has been charged with manslaughter and endangering the welfare of a child. How about ending the welfare of a child? Good God. How is Amanda Davila ever going to live with herself? I have no idea. Oh, back to January 6th. One more. The Kansas City Star with a story of Chad, of course it's Chad, Dustin Suenram. He got charged this week with knowingly entering or remaining in a restricted building or grounds without lawful authority, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, and parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. The 43-year-old was let out on $5,000 bond because, of course, and he shows up in court again 11 days from now on August 1st. The FBI managed to track him down after, I'm sure this will drive Jim Jacket off Jordan crazy. The FBI found that a cell phone associated with his company Gmail account was inside and outside the Capitol on January 6, 2021, between 2:43 p.m. and 4:09 p.m., so he hung out for a while. Suenram owns an outfit called New Look Companies Landscaping. Through open sources, the FBI said it learned that Suenram traveled to Washington on January 5, 2021 through a private bus charter company because the terrorist attack was, in fact, organized. It was not like Monkey Up, DeQuantis said, and people just happened to wander by and go, oh, I think I'll attack the Capitol today. I'm just a tourist. No. And he went into the Capitol with the American flag painted on his head. And he's a veteran of the... Sorry, Mark. He's a veteran of your beloved Corps. He's an ex-Marine. Who once took an oath to defend our country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Or language similar to that. And then became one of those, well, domestic enemies. Darndest thing, huh? And we still need to talk about the bill introduced in the Senate that passed out of committee to impose an ethics standard on the Supreme Court of the United States. Hopefully we'll get to that once we get the front porch going, and it's time to do that. And I'm unplugging the charger from the ancient iPad because a 4-year-old iPad is ancient. If you've never tried the front porch discussion before, please feel free to jump in. I'd love that. We'd love to hear your voice. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And so let me check in with Roger and see what's going on. Hey, Roger.
And so let me check in.
Roger?
Yeah, I was having Windows on my computer open and didn't get it to shrink down to unmute my microphone.
No problem. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, pretty good. Sorry, I was a little late to the party, but
you're this is your busy season.
Well, yeah, but I was also at the fair booth from 11 to 1, and then the wife wanted to do a little bit of shopping, and you know, I'm busy.
Very much so.
And on top of that, in between everything else, I'm building a bookcase for the grandchildren's bedroom to store their stuffies and their Legos on. So, you know.
Oh, how sweet.
I keep busy. Let's put it that way.
I think that's a good thing to be. How was the fair?
The only thing I saw was sitting at our booth and wandered out in the sunshine to get out of the air conditioning so my feet could warm up a little bit, because I'm not used to, I mean, yes, it gets warm, and yes, we have an air conditioner, but we put our air conditioner at like 75, and I was in my shorts and t-shirt and sandals, and the exhibit hall I was in was a little bit on the cooler side, so I wandered out and stood in the sun for about 10 minutes, and then came back in, and I was fine. But I haven't seen any of the fair yet. But I've got tomorrow and Sunday to also be at the fair booth for my stint there and answering questions. And I think Saturday the kids and grandkids are going to meet up with us at about 1 o'clock. And then we're going to wander around and look at all the animals and all the other stuff that happens at a county fair. So,
sounds like an absolute blast, yeah.
I don't do the rides anymore. I'm a little bit too old for that. And, I also, again, one of my past work experiences was running the booth of Take 3 Shot, Shoot Out the Little Red Dot you go home the winter for about five different occasions at one time. And then I decided, well, it wasn't five. See, it was one, two, three, four different venues, all local. And then they wanted me to hit the road with them. And I said, no, thank you. I didn't want to become a carny.
Yeah, but think of the benefits. All that wonderful fried food, you know, all that fried food, and yet somehow you never see an obese carny. I don't know. Maybe it's the meth.
No. I'll tell you the secret on that. All those food booths that push out all that fried fair food garbage. Well, in the morning before the fair opens, they put out some really good breakfast-type food, and because you're with the carny, you learn, you know, with the carnival, you learn who specializes in what, and there's always a back door, and if you're one of the carnival workers, you go to the back door, and they might just have corn dogs out front, but you go to the back door, and because you're a carny, you say, hey, I need a roast beef sandwich with some lettuce and hold the pickles. And you come back 15, 20 minutes later, there's your sandwich. You give them a couple of bucks and off the road you go. There's a secret menu in every one of those food booths at the carnival.
I had no idea. I would be content with a corn dog that didn't come out of a freezer.
Yeah, but the menu is not posted and not available to the public. But those food booths provide, I mean, the breakfast was sausage, eggs, and sourdough toast with jam and jelly. But that's not on the menu when you walk down the midway.
It's not for the marks. It's not for the rubes. It's not for the muggles, the civilians.
No, but the carnivals take care of their own.
Oh yeah,
and of course, when you're working at a carnival, when you get some time off, you get to ride any ride for free and go to the front of the line and all that kind of stuff. So, I think I was on every ride that carnival had at least once, and you know, you get to know the people because the one I was doing off to the side, we all had a tent pitched. And, you know, you spend the nights there, and then you get up in the morning, and fairs don't open until around 10, 11 in the morning. But you and virtually everybody else is awake at around 6, 6:37, you know, when it gets light. And the ride monkeys are greasing and tightening cables and all the rest of that stuff. And the people running the booths are filling the fish bowls with water and goldfish and gathering up all the ring tosses and the rings and in general getting your booth ready to go. And then you go to the food booth and get some food. You know, you socialize. And when I was doing it in the evening, instead of sitting around getting drunk, you went off to a corner and lit up a little of Humboldt County's homegrown. And there's a lot of sociability that goes on with the carnies. And as I say, it becomes a little community, and they stick to themselves because it took me like the third site before I was being accepted as somebody who was a really member of the group. Because a lot of the carnivals, they'll hire local people to run a booth for that site. And then when they move on 20 miles down the road, they'll hire new people for that one. Well, I just traveled along because it was all close enough and I had my camping gear and all that. And the first time I stayed, first night, couple of nights I was there, I figured I had to go to town, buy my own groceries and had my backpacking stove and started cooking my own meals. And pretty soon somebody came over and said, hey, you know, you don't have to cook your own food. Go over to the popcorn. Oh, I'm not sure. I don't remember what it was, but the popcorn booth, they serve a good breakfast and it's cheap. And then I started doing that, and then I found out they also did dinners. And, I was being integrated into the system when I decided I didn't want to travel. But you're right, there's a lot of math and a very insular group. Kind of hard to crack, but you know, once you crack it, they're the nicest people you'd ever want to meet.
Oh yeah. Back eons ago, there was something called the Black Walnut Festival that would come, that happened every October, and it was the biggest deal of the entire social year in that tiny little West Virginia county, and the centerpiece of it was the carnival, and I remember one booth in particular because it was so. They were out of Ohio, and they were DeRusso's Italian sausages. And you know, most Italian sausages are curved. These were straight. And they sat there and just simmered them all day in this beautiful Italian tomato sauce with peppers and onions. And the bread was chewy. And I would literally eat them every day all week while the carnival was in town. Nothing like them. Funny the things you remember. Got a note from Matt in San Francisco. Corn dog? A corn dog that doesn't come from the freezer? You elitist liberal shill. Yes, yes, absolutely. Because they're rare. I don't know about anywhere else. They're hard to find now. You know, it's been batter dipped in that beer batter and then flash fried and crispy and wonderful. And the mustard all over the place. It's not the same thing, those state fair brand corn dogs you get out of the freezer at, like, Wally World and wherever. Flavio.
Well, I haven't cruised the Midway yet, but it seems to me a couple of years ago when we did the fair, the corn dog booth was actually, you could see them sticking a stick in a hot dog and dipping it in the batter and then putting it into their deep fat fryer.
Yeah, that's how they're supposed to be. It's very hard to find those anymore.
I'll have to look, but on my diet that I'm on right now, I don't think I'll do my annual corn dog.
Well, the Minnesota State Fair is coming up, and I'm just waiting to watch Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis make the same mistake that so many Republican politicians seem to make with corn dogs. And it's always such a delight. I think back to Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman's husband. And was it Ted Cruz was it Rick Good Hair Smart Guy Glasses Perry? Because there's just something that shouldn't be seen in public about watching a Republican politician tie into a corn dog. Flavio says, you haven't lived until you've had a cheese curd taco at the Wisconsin State Fair. And then adds, they even managed to ruin the humble but delicious bratwurst with sauerkraut. The bratkraut and cheese curd taco. No, Flavio. Cheese curd taco I could probably get down with. But I like my brats, you know, a beer and cheese brat, a little mustard, some kraut. Really, anything else is gilding the lily.
And I like to use that Coleman's powdered mustard.
Oh, that's good.
But instead of water, I use red wine vinegar.
Oh, that'd be heaven.
To mix it up. But that French's yellow baby poo that comes out of a squeeze bottle.
Well, there went dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. But, yeah.
It's not mustard. It's a yellow goo. It's not mustard.
And God does it stain.
I can handle like Grey Poupon or some of the other ones, but that the usual hot dog stand, burger place, little packets of mustard. Just, I don't know. There's just something about it that turns my stomach.
That, well, I'm not in disagreement with you. Oh my goodness, Ralph's serving as the Horn DeRusso's Italian Sausage Research Department. I had no idea they were available for order. Oh, wait, where to buy? I got a feeling they're not going to be in any... No, they're not in any stores near me. You can get them all around Youngstown. But, let's see. No. I'm still out of luck. Thanks, Ralphs.
Well, the solution there is get the recipe and make your own.
Nah. It would spoil the romance. Because I am a romantic at heart. Yesterday, I even... I'm learning. Let's put it that way. And I was wearing a cute little white eyelet shift, tank style. And I was like, I want a hot dog. It's like, no, you don't. Don't do that. Don't just tweak the goddess of irony's little pink tomato nose. She will throw yellow mustard all over that cute little dress. So I see Steve in New York in the room, because the Cincinnati Reds logo is a dead giveaway. Steve, how are you?
I was on mute, sorry. I'm okay. And I have to... I'm going to throw a little monkey wrench in there. And not a monkey wrench, but I actually like that baby shit out of a squeeze bottle.
Well, that's because you're the horns of resident contrarian.
Okay. That doesn't mean I don't like all the other types of mustard, but... I love... A fair hot dog and sauerkraut and sweet relish and that mustard. And the other time, other thing I like it on is there was a place back in where I was born, back in Greenville, a restaurant called the Made Right.
Oh my God. I knew you were going for the Made Right.
Yeah. With a big bubblegum wall.
That's the sandwich that just the name of it just always somehow a loose meat sandwich.
Yeah, you know what it is? I'll just be very honest. It's a local Greenville version of White Casket.
But I mean, it's not a patty, is it?
No. But it's got that kind of mystique, the kind of, you know, the local people love them. But if you're out on a Friday or Saturday night, had too few many beers, and being a small town, not much is open, except the Made Right is probably open till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning those nights. And you go in there and you get one of those little Made Rights, or a cheese right, and they have. Homemade milkshakes. They make their own milkshakes.
Is there like
there.
A sauce on them or something?
No, they're steamed in. I don't know that anyone actually knows the recipe except the people who.
Because it just sounds like a sloppy Joe without the sloppy Joe sauce to me.
No, they're steamed in. It's almost kind of like, and I've actually tried. I've tried. Recipes where people claimed that they're recipes, and it gets close. And what I've steamed them in is beer, pepper, salt. What the hell is
onions,
that?
Garlic?
You don't. You put those on. You don't steam the. You don't. That's not what you steam the meat in. But of course, if you want, you know, dill pickles or onions or mustard.
Yeah. You know, it actually is beginning to sound pretty damn decent.
They're, you know, the homemade milkshake, they do it all right there. The other thing too is in this part of the country, mustard is not a thing. I can't tell you how many times I've gone into like anything, a Mickey D's or a Burger King, any of those fast food or even not so fast food, and you ask for mustard and they kind of look at you like they don't. Like you just ask if they would, you know, blow their nose on the burger or whatever it is.
Okay, Roger started. You're continuing.
Yeah. So
dinner's fucking like, over. In the Central Daylight Time Zone, and Billable Rick's snack is now in the trash.
Yeah, as soon as I said that, I thought, oh, shit, I just fucked with people's dinner. But it's just kind of – so I, you know, yeah, I like the baby shit in a bottle. Not a bottle, a squeeze bottle, I think. So.
Mm. And I guess what gives it its signature bright yellow is what, turmeric?
I have no idea.
Because I'm a label reader. It's like vinegar, mustard, turmeric.
Well, isn't mustard kind of a yellowish powder?
Well, it is, but it doesn't have color like that. Otherwise, you know, something like, I don't know how to pronounce it, but my favorite mustard in the world is M-A-E-L-E apostrophe S. And it's French, and it's Dijon. And it's kind of gray.
Yeah, I know. Oh, did I? I know I sent you, I think I sent you, one time I sent two things to you in a box. I think, actually, now that I think about it, those might have been the two bottles that exploded. Didn't I send mustard and like bacon relish or something?
Yes,
like that?
and the bacon jam didn't make it and the mustard didn't make it.
Yeah, but your masks, you said, smelled and tasted like heaven.
The masks were positively taste tempting.
And when
I wore them, I'd get looks from people around me going, well, what's the smell? It smells good.
Yeah. By the way, this is out of my head. Do you remember I told you that story? I got those beers and that German candy.
Yes. Yes.
Did I ever tell you what I figured out what it was? Did I ever tell you the story?
Yeah, you had met them somewhere.
I met them, of all places, in an Irish pub not too far from Midtown. And subsequently, they actually, you know, and I was pissed at myself because I lost the box. I didn't know how to send them a thank you note. Then they looked me up on Instagram. I didn't even know I had an Instagram. What hoodoo? And we connected on Facebook. So we've exchanged messages back and forth now and again. And I don't know if I told you, there were four big cans, like half liter cans, and I put them in the fridge at my office, and I'll be goddamned if some fucker didn't drink two of them.
Rotten bastard.
Yeah, exactly. You know what would have been at least.
Hey, Steve, you doing anything with those beers?
Or at least left me the cans, so I would, you know, I could have, you know, so I took, and I have one been sitting in my office since then, and I, of course, I put nasty notes on the fridge saying, thanks for drinking my beers, you dumb fucker. I honestly don't understand people sometimes. I lived with somebody one time who, now mind you, this is the guy that tried to strangle me, who I try to buy really good butter, and I bought some really good butter because I cook with it, and I left it in the fridge, and all of a sudden, every so often I'd go in, whenever I would go in there, some of the butter was gone, and I finally said to him, I said, are you eating my butter? And his response to me was, "Well, I didn't know who it belonged to." I said, "Well, you knew it wasn't yours."
I thought it was for the group.
No, I'm particular about my butter too, and I remember the story from years back about how, and this was back when, who was that little punk? That little punk governor of Wisconsin.
Like which one? Scott Walker?
Yeah, Snot Walker. I mean, we've already taken dinner out behind the barn and beaten it with an axe.
Wow,
so.
Yeah.
But his Wisconsin state government threw a fit over Kerrygold and declared that Kerrygold could not be sold in the state of Wisconsin because it was not up to the standards of Wisconsin butter, which was laughable. But I used to buy a lot of Kerrygold, and Kroger's Private Selection has an imported French butter.
Mm-hmm.
But the best I have lately found is at My Little Wiggling Pig from a place called Greenbrier Dairy, Greenbrier Creamery. And it's the best butter I've ever eaten in my life.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I'm want to do weird things like type into Google, what's the best butter in the world? And I'll be damned if I didn't come across a whole cooking website and they had the 20 top butters in the world. And Kerrygold was number 17. And I kid you not, it said basically the reason it was not higher up is because it was too available. It wasn't exclusive enough.
Wow. Butter has a snob factor.
I'm like, oh, okay. So us plebs aren't worthy.
Yeah, if the proles can have it, it can't be that good.
It can't be that good. But I did go on there. It was ranked number 4. It's a British butter from a fairly new creamery that I bought some of that. And I left it. I unfortunately left it in my office, sitting in the fridge. So one of these times I'm into the office in a while. I've been working at home a lot, so I want to try that. Anyway, Roger, I interrupted you. Please proceed.
Well, the butter fat content is what makes good butter and not so good butter. But I did a little bit of a search, and I discovered that the classic French's yellow mustard is made with distilled vinegar, water, number 1 grade mustard seed, salt, turmeric, paprika, spice, whatever the hell that is, natural flavor, and garlic powder.
Yeah, sounds
so
about
that yellow.
And
the yellow probably is the turmeric.
Yeah. Right. Ralph sent the same along to me, and it's funny, though, if you're a label reader like me, the 99-cent mustard does not have some of the things you just listed. So it's possible for plain yellow mustard to get even plainer and ugh.
But getting to the butter number, your European butters tend to have more fat content and less water content. And every dairy can do their own. For a long time at our local co-op, they used to sell unhomogenized milk. And I would buy the half gallon jugs and let the cream float to the top. Skim off as much of that cream as I could, and at the end of the week, cream lasts longer in the fridge than whole milk does. But anyhow, and then I'd shake it up, and I was kind of making my own 2% milk and saving the butter fat. And you just take that butter fat, let it warm up to room temperature, put it in the blender, and let it go, and then you can, with a fork, get rid of a lot of the liquid from it, and made my own butter, and that was it. Was
now,
great.
Do you have to let the cream clabber?
No, you just put it in a blender and let it go. It goes to whipping cream first. And then if you keep going past the whipping cream, you know, you take the egg beater and stir it up and you get whipping cream. But if you go too far, it'll actually start turning into butter. And if you keep going, you end up with butter. But the blender is the easiest way to do it. I've never tried one of those hand crank paddle wheel butter churn numbers or the pull the rod up and down colonial day butter churns.
Yeah, Dasher.
But I just find the blender just.
Well, I was the reason blender, I ask is I was go. I always understood you had to let. I mean, that's why buttermilk is buttermilk.
Well, I'm not saying that mine's the only way to make butter.
No. But like this stuff, I can't believe it. But this stuff I'm getting from Greenbrier Creamery has a tartness to it, so you can tell that they've clabbered the cream before they process it. Because
well, buttermilk is another one of those things I can't stomach.
Oh, Lord, I can.
Robin, you can actually drink buttermilk.
Good God,
I mean,
yes.
Can you? God.
I can't handle it.
I'm like Roger. I feel like if Dirty Feet had a drink, that's what it would taste like. Man, we are really screwing with.
It's over. It's over.
Yeah.
People are doing shots of Pepto-Bismol at this point, Steve. By the way, Matt in San Francisco wrote in, Kerrygold is life. Well, it's just too available. The fact that us proles can get it.
Right. Now, I'm not saying I don't like it. I love it.
I do, too. I just like this stuff from Greenbrier County better.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, I went to the website where I saw that, and they actually had, and it's funny, I'm going to send the link to you, but the link says the best olive oils, but it's not. It has that in there. They list the second best olive oil for cooking is Costco organic olive oil.
Not surprising.
No, not surprising to me really at all.
I mean, I have yearned for a Costco, let's put it that way, and a Trader Joe's.
One of the things about Costco is that Kirkland brand, if you follow the rabbit hole on some Facebook posts, you discover that a whole lot of those Kirkland brands are truly, let's take their cranberry juice. Kirkland cranberry juice is made, that name just escaped me, Ocean Spray. It's Ocean Spray cranberry juice, but just bottled in Kirkland.
I'll bet, Roger, the way they get the price down is they probably buy it in truckloads and then just package it in bigger bottles.
Well, they contract with Ocean Spray.
Yeah.
Ocean Spray does it and puts it in a Kirkland jug. And their Kirkland vodka is suspected to be Grey Goose by chemical analysis. Their Kirkland batteries are Duracells with a different wrapper on them. Those are the only ones I can come up with off the top of my head. But there's not, most of their stuff is okay. So let's say Ocean Spray was having a hard time unloading all the juice they could make, and Costco went up to him and said, well, I'll tell you what, since you're making this and you're having a hard time selling it all under your brand, we'll take 100% of your excess and you put it in bigger jugs and wrap our label on it, and we'll take it off your hands at a cheaper price. Because Kirkland basically does no advertising. Costco advertises, come join our club, but as to the individual foods, you don't see them advertising. And that cuts out a whole lot. I mean, how much cheaper would Budweiser beer be if they didn't advertise all the time?
True. I mean, And you know what? And the Budweiser or whatever, or say Anheuser-Busch, their ads are some of the probably some of the best ads in the industry. And that you're right. Of course, you're right, Roger. That's where they spend all the money.
Yeah. So Ocean Spray probably figures out what a good price is to get rid of all the juice they can make and sells it basically out the door at cost plus a profit margin for them because they're not going to sell it at a loss and just offset. That way they cream off whatever they want to put their label on and the rest of the run just goes to something else.
Well, further proof that, you know, within capitalism, volume is everything. I mean, I don't know if I'm an inveterate car browser, not in the market, but can't resist looking at them. And as far as I can tell, the best place, you know, there's Carvana and CarMax and all of those places. Best place to buy a car used is probably Enterprise Car Sales. Hey, guys, unpaid product placement, okay? Because Enterprise and other rental agencies, but primarily Enterprise, is probably the source for the vast majority of used cars in this country. Because Enterprise buys at huge volume, and consequently, they buy from the auto manufacturers at almost a discount, at a discount because they're buying so much. And so by the time they've rented one for a year, maybe 2 years, they've gotten all of their cost back out of it and then some. And so then they take the top either 5 or 10% of their fleet and hang on to them and sell them through Enterprise Car Sales, and the rest go off to the auctions and Carvana and CarMax and whatever. But they keep the top 10%, and then they sell those, no haggle, no nothing. They sell those at 10% below Blue Book. What's really weird, though, is, and you know, this is a serious program about serious issues, not just food porn, is that in the aftermath of the pandemic, it used to be that you could buy a used car from Enterprise, and it might have 29,000 miles on it. But because of what the pandemic did to the supply chain, now they're selling cars with 60 and 70,000 miles on them. So, for instance, I got our little Ford, our little sedan, which I love, by the way. I never thought I'd love a Ford, but I do. I've had rental Camrys and rental Altimas and things like that, and this Ford just runs rings around it, knock wood. But I got that with, I think, 26,000 miles on it. I just out of curiosity looked the other day and no. There ain't no 26,000 mile Ford Fusions. And no, they're all 50 and 60 and 70. But it's a good place to look. It's a good place to look for a car. Let's see. Hey, a note from, a note from Dave number 11. Hey, Dave. Subject line Costco. For anybody that's got a Costco, pay attention. Vanilla Costco ice cream, the best, is Humboldt Creamery. How about that? Oh, I bet that would be good. I'd like to taste test it next to some Bluebell.
Humboldt Creamery was a great little creamery at Fernbridge, California, right outside of Ferndale, south of Eureka. And it was a cooperative. And they got a general manager who decided his pocket was a better place for the profits than back to the dairy farmers that owned the creamery. And they ended up going up belly up, and somebody bought the brand, and Humboldt Creamery is no longer making ice cream in Humboldt County. But when they were, those Eel River Valley bottom grass-fed cows came up with the best milk in the world. Foremost, back in the day, even put in a powdered milk plant in the town of Lolita. and sucked up every bit of milk they could get from the grass lands of Humboldt County. And then I don't know whether the economy of scale or whatever, they shut down as well. But Humboldt Creamery ice cream is good ice cream. I'm not knocking it, but it's no longer made in Humboldt County. Now, getting back on the capitalism and economy of scale, that tornado that ripped out the Pfizer plant, familiar mm-hmm. with that one? Did you catch the little bit that Pfizer plant, that one that got hit with the tornado, produced 24% of all the sterile injectable drugs in the United States? And they are now talking about a serious potential shortage that will affect every single hospital in the United States for, like, the injectable anesthetics and other injectable sterile drugs, the ones they put in your IV. So 24% of the IV drugs, the plant has just been destroyed. And this is, you know, we talked about the supply chain problem with the pandemic, and I'm looking now at the economy of scale where we've permitted one or two companies to totally dominate an industry. We've seen it in broadcasting. Now we're seeing a problem with a single tornado in wiping out 25% of the IV drugs because it was concentrated in one plant.
All the eggs in one basket doesn't – it's not – It probably thrills the greedy little hearts, the avaricious little souls of people with Harvard MBAs. I remember my buddy Bruce of Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge at the beginning of every month. He just laughed and laughed and laughed one time. We were talking. I was up in Wisconsin, and I said, "Yeah, MBA from Harvard, more bigger asshole." And he thought it was the funniest thing he ever heard. He had, what a laugh he had. I saw the story. I mentioned it in the filler obster about the Pfizer plant. And the first thing I thought of was COVID vaccines. I wonder if that's within that 24% or if the COVID vaccines are manufactured somewhere entirely different.
Is Moderna Pfizer?
No, they're separate companies.
They're separate. I mean, they may have done the Pfizer COVID vaccine there. I don't know.
All my vaccines have been Pfizer, and I'm going to be due for one. I'm trying to hold out till like September, so maybe it'll get me through the winter.
I think Pfizer's where they make them. I think it's in Michigan. For some reason, that sticks in my head. I mean, let's be frank here. What causes drugs to be so high, at least partly in the U.S.? I mean, putting aside the fact that, you know, people talk about drugs being so cheap elsewhere. What sucks is, and I'm not – don't get me wrong. I'm only saying this is what I think this is actually true.
I know where you're going.
No, it's just we actually subsidize – the rest of the world, number one, probably. At least that's probably a part of it. The other part is advertising. You go to other parts of the world. I've heard people from other parts of the world, and they come here and they see, you know, name a drug. It's advertised on TV.
Ozempic.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
fuckers.
Robin, there was a time when probably the FTC or whoever it was, it was illegal to – you couldn't do that.
I kind of like that America, Steve. I like the America where lawyers and doctors and drug firms and booze companies can't advertise. I like that.
Certainly you shouldn't be able to advertise a drug that you can't buy yourself.
Isn't it funny? Okay, now we all know I am – Well, you know, as the Pineapple Prince used to say, in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers, I quit smoking on September the 15th, 2020. I'm thrilled about it. I don't ever want to go back. But isn't it interesting that we decided that liquor companies need to advertise, and somehow or another, though, we still haven't gotten around it? You know, because remember, Winston got taken off of the Winston Cup in NASCAR. Virginia Slims got taken off of the tennis tour in women's tennis. Because, and of course, there was the crusade against Joe Camel, because Joe Camel was just too cool and made kids want to be camels? I don't know.
When I grew up, I always wanted to be a camel.
It's probably what transed me, you know?
Sorry.
And by the way, though, I said earlier, Steve, that I was going to try to hold off on my vaccine till like September or October so it would get me through the winter. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think I need a vaccine anymore. Because, I'm a Chinese Ashkenazi Jew.
Oh, my God.
Came with transition.
Well, you could get Tay-Sachs. If you're Ashkenazi, you could get Tay-Sachs syndrome. That's one of those, you know, like sickle cell is almost exclusive. I don't quite understand why it's exclusive to black folks, but Tay-Sachs.
Would you believe me if I told you it has to do with, I believe, Anopheles mosquitoes?
Robin, listen, I'm going to tell you something. I have learned that there's been many times when I've sat and listened to you either now or in your former life and thought, what the fuck is she talking about? And then I look it up and say, well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. She was right. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me.
Because, this is a historical digression.
Does it have something to do with Rome?
No, we're post-Rome on this one. Fuck you.
Don't go promising me a good time.
Oh, shut up. You don't like girls. Quit it. Stop that. Whatever you're about to say, stop.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Okay, I'm so proud. But no, it's post-Rome. And the reason that the Europeans invented chattel slavery was because when those northern Europeans started moving into hot climes, including including North America and South America, the Western Hemisphere generally. In the early colonial days of the Northern Hemisphere, there was something called the seasoning. And I'm not talking about salt and pepper. Basically, it was Western European white person could survive your first two years in the Western Hemisphere, you had passed the seasoning. Oftentimes, that would include surviving either yellow fever or malaria. Primarily, the Portuguese and the Spanish, well, when they moved into hot climates, they started dropping like flies to various mosquito-borne diseases. And what they found was that West African people had evolved a resistance to malaria and yellow fever, and I hope I'm getting this right. I think I am. But the same thing that provided resistance to malaria and yellow fever is the same thing that exists on the sickle cell. And so the two are inexorably tied. Go ahead, Roger.
If my recollection's correct, in order to come down with sickle cell anemia, both parents must be carrying it as a recessive. And when it joins together, which is theoretically one out of four pregnancies with two recessive parents, that is the deadly form of having that resistance. As long as it's in your body as a recessive gene, it gives the resistance to malaria, is my recollection. Because, I mean, you could be a carrier of sickle cell anemia and never be sick.
Right.
From sickle cell. And that's when you're carrying it as a recessive. But when you catch the gene pool lottery and get the recessive from both parents, then you get the full-on sickle cell anemia, which causes you the life-threatening problem. But as long as it's just in the background as recessive, it's sort of like if you and your spouse produce a redheaded child, that child is the recipient of two recessives because the redheaded gene is recessive.
Same for blue eyes, said the blue-eyed girl.
Yeah.
So yeah, both of my parents had brown eyes.
But they carried
a recessive blue-eyed gene on both sides, and I got it.
So if they'd been of African descent, you might be suffering from sickle cell anemia,
right,
because you won the lottery and collected two recessives.
And so what happened is when, especially, and this is particularly with regard to the Spanish, when the Spanish arrive in Mexico, they immediately, eventually conquer those peoples and destroy the so-called Aztec Empire, which was not, and then began enslaving the locals because it had... And the locals didn't much care to be enslaved and found death preferable. And so when that didn't work, the Spanish started importing stolen people from Africa. And in part, that's why mestizo or Creole culture develops so relatively early on in the Hispanic portions and the Portuguese portions, hi Flavio, of the Western Hemisphere.
Well, DeSantis, his education department just hadn't come about yet to inform.
Oh, well played, Roger. Well played.
That they were being benefited by the slavery.
Oh, what I saw, I think I screen capped it the other day. That reminds me.
Florida social studies now are supposed
to here
teach.
It is. Yeah, this is out of Florida. This is the unit in an elementary textbook that mentions Rosa Parks. The initial version for the review says, and I read this and I just wanted to punch somebody. Trying to get over that part of the transition. Rosa Parks showed courage. One day, she rode the bus. She was told to move to a different seat because of the color of her skin. She did not. She did what she believed was right. Okay? I mean, if you're teaching a third grader about Rosa Parks, and of course, I guess one of Monkey Up DeClantis' primary objections is, why do we have to teach that to third graders? Critical race theory. That's the initial version. The monkey-upped version, the DeSantisized version, says Rosa Parks showed courage. One day, she rode the bus. She was told to move to a different seat. She did not. She did what she believed was right. So they completely erased they erased the Plessy versus Ferguson right out of it. They erased the Jim Crow right out of it. Because, you know, maybe a kindly older lady needed the seat. So Rosa Parks was an asshole because she wouldn't move. I mean, can you see how a third grader would wonder? I think that what they're trying to do in godforsaken shitholes like Florida is actually going to make matters worse, because the second one is going to cause the child to ask more questions. Why did they ask her to move?
and probably a bill will be passed that the teacher can't explain that.
It already has been.
Bringing critical race theory into the agenda.
Right.
Yeah, exactly, Roger. What if the kid goes, well, why did they ask her to move? Or why did they want her to move?
Well, living in California, which is not even close to Florida, about 3,000 miles away, when I was looking at getting into teaching, because of what my degree was in speech communications, and I was told, well, you'll never pass the test. You can't be a math teacher. You need to teach, you know, or why don't you teach social studies or English literature? I said, there's no way I could teach any of those. Well, why not? I said, I'd be in too much trouble with the school board. I need to teach something that has zero political potential to even come into the discussion. Because if I start expressing my true beliefs about any kind of literature or anything else, I'll get fired. I said, well, that's unfortunate, but, you know, you'll never be a teacher. Well, I was a math teacher. But when I was teaching the upper levels, like the calculus, I always worked in something, a problem with the prey or predator fish in a pond and the statistical analysis and rates of reproduction and all that kind of stuff, and geared it toward the scientific. Fortunately, I never did really get into the climate change thing. But in the area where I was living, I probably would have been in trouble with the school board for things of that sort. But I had to stay totally away from anything political because, well, I had a U.S. history teacher in high school who I swear to this day was a John Bircher, and he inserted John Bircher shit all the time in our U.S. history class. And I argued with him vociferously over a lot of it. And, of course, didn't get a very good grade, but I still managed to get into college. But
classic case of shut up and pass the class.
Yeah, but the fact is it's been proper and acceptable to preach right-wing shit.
For eons, yes.
But not left-wing shit.
Yeah, like when the teacher in my elementary school referred to the war of Northern aggression. The war of Northern aggression.
Oh, Northern aggression, okay.
Don't you speak Southern?
No, I don't speak Southern. When I was a kid growing up, we'd mom and dad both being educators, we'd take summer trips. And we always did Yellowstone, Tetons, you know, Canada, that kind of thing. And one time I said, how come we never go down to Texas or Alabama or anything like that? Dad looked at me and said, son, when they end segregation and things become equal, we can go to the South. But I will not leave a dime in a segregated state.
Good man.
Dad grew up in St. Louis. That's where he was born and raised. And the segregation and all that in St. Louis, and he was born in 1907, so he grew up during the teens. He was just absolutely opposed to the way people were treated in the South, and that's why he came north. Now, it could be because he was also Jewish, but that has very little to do with my upbringing. It has to do more with his, although he wasn't raised Orthodox or anything like that. Mother was Jewish, father wasn't.
Well, it's read through the maternal line, so...
Yeah. So even though I, DNA-wise, I'm very heavily Ashkenazi, I'm not considered Jewish by the Jewish faith, and yet my sister's daughter is married to an Israeli, and she's converted, and their wedding was a traditional Jewish wedding, and I was helping hold up the canopy and wore a yarmulke and the whole nine yards for her wedding.
A Jewish wedding was one of the most enjoyable weddings I've ever been to many, many years ago. Dancing the Hora and the Broken Glass. Back then, I was cute, and I was cute in a yarmulke.
The wedding reception was a fun time.
And the food, at least in the one that I went to, was fucking
food.
Unbelievable. Like, and there was miles and miles and miles of it.
And it was all good.
My niece had this friend who's since died, but she took over the, quote, catering, unquote. And it was, they rented a hall, and Susie had more food out there than an army could eat. It was great.
That was my first experience with Cream's pickled herring, and it has been a lifelong love affair since. And I don't even like fishy fish. But it was yummy.
If you don't like fishy fish, get... Oh, God, you're never... You can find it on the internet. There's a sauce called Larapin Dill Sauce.
You had me at dill.
Well... Larapin is a restaurant in Trinidad, California. And Dixie married a guy named Pear, and Pear had a bunch of culinary stuff, and they started making dill sauce. And for a while, I was growing the dill, and they were making it in their own kitchen, and dill sauce. And now it's farmed off to some factory that makes it and bottles it. I can find it in Humboldt County Safeway, but I can't find it up here. So anytime we go down to Humboldt County, we make sure we bring home enough. But you take a nice salmon, preferably a wild caught, not an Atlantic farm, and put it in a Pyrex baking dish and slather Larapin dill sauce on top of it and then bake it in the oven until the salmon flakes and then eat it. It is... incredible. I mean, it's got salmon flavor, but it's not fishy. Anyhow, if you ever go on, I could find it on the internet and put a link in the chat room.
Is it Larapin?
Hang on.
Yeah, we're going to make Roger work. I wanted to go back to a story that I mentioned in the Filler Lobster. By the way, we're into the third hour of the program. We took a big bite out of the deficit. We are $75 from being fully funded for last week. $75 from being fully funded for last week's Friday on the Front Porch, which gives us hope as we move into the final week of July. So $75 knocks out last Friday, and then maybe we can get started on this past Moran Monday.
I have a story to bring up later after you talk, Robin.
Okay. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you if we could finish off last week at the end of this one, be only a week behind. Too many ums, Robin. So I mentioned during the Filler Lobster the story of the young woman in Nebraska, the teenager, who's going to do 90 days in jail for attending to her own reproductive needs. That's horrifying enough. But as a not-so-gentle reminder of the interconnectedness of things like this, while Jim Jacketoff Jordan is barking and moaning about the federal government censoring complaints about tyrannical government during the COVID, about lockdowns, and it... He's, again, as noted yesterday, he's doing the work of his Russian masters. Well, you'll never hear him say a word about this young woman from Nebraska, Celeste Burgess, aged 19, and her mama Jessica, aged 42. The cops prosecuted her because they asked Zucker Dweeb's Meta for the private messages between the girl and her mother. And Zucker Dweeb just said, sure, here you go. And that was the basis of this prosecution. And that is hateful and utterly disgusting. One other thing separate topic. One of the charges mentioned as being a potential charge for Nitwit Nero is something called Section 241, conspiracy to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States. Stephen, New York, you there?
I'm here.
Care to guess where
last part.
Care to guess where that comes from?
I've heard that language before.
Conspiracy to...
Hold on a second.
Because this is the goddess of irony at peak.
Is that Rico?
No, it's much better than that. You ready?
Go ahead. I've heard the language. I just can't think what it is off the top of my
head. Conspiracy to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States.
Is that Section 1981 or 1983?
No, that's Section 241. And the fact that it uses him and not them tells us it's an older statute?
Right.
Steve, it's from the Klan Act. Nitwit Nero is going to be charged with violating the Klan Act. I'm gonna sacrifice an entire case of rubber chickens at midnight to the goddess of irony tonight.
Oh, you know what? The ironicalness is just beautiful. Oh, the goddess, I gotta say it. Oh, ain't goddess good?
And the thing is, it's already been used in a January 6th prosecution, so it's not like there isn't precedent. Some dickhead named Ricky Vaughn, whose real name is Douglas Mackey, a social media influencer, was convicted earlier this year of a scheme to deprive individuals of their constitutional right to vote.
I hate these people.
The soak is going to be prosecuted, or maybe prosecuted, under the Klan Act. And for Mackey's case, well, Mackey, having been convicted of this one particular charge, is looking up to 10 in the joint. So, well. Deep subject. Ex-president convicted of violating the Klan Act. Now, earlier, our buddy Texas T posted a meme on my Facebook page of Lionel Richie. You're once, twice, three times indicted, which I loved. But this is going to be even better. The thrice indicted, twice impeached, violator of the Klan Act. Do we love that? Do we think that that is entirely appropriate for the son of a Klansman?
Of course.
I think so. By the way, Matt in San Francisco says social media influencer, or as I call them, unemployed. See also... Living in Mom's Basement on Cheetos. See also, Through the 16th Brick at Stonewall.
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry, Matt.
Yeah. Hey, did we all hear about the latest with Steven Crowder? How very interesting this was?
Oh, hold up just one second, because I got to send out a thank you. Thank you very kindly to Emilio.
Stop censoring RFK, Robin. Jill Stein was right.
Jill Buckenstein. And thank you to Brendan. Brendan jumped in. And so we are now down to $49 to go to finish off last Friday. It's fantastic. Thank you so much, Brendan. Thank you so much, Emilio. But I'm not going to lay off. Oh, wait a minute. Joy in Ann Arbor gave me, okay, three funny things, okay? Because Joy is forever giving me a giggle, and I gave her one for a change. I ran across something, and I've been reveling in it since yesterday. A new reference for Nitwit Nero's tacky golf motel in Florida. Miralax-ago. Yeah, I know. I told Joy about it, and she said, mix my ashes into some vanilla bluebell and call it limited edition. Joyous. It tastes ponderous, man. Ponderous. And she said, also, two tweaks. Trump's rickety social media platform, Tripe Social, and when one sends along someone else's tripe, it's a retripe. And RFK is Rotted Fuck Jr. All of which is good. Love you, Joy. Before we go to what you were going to say, Jeremy has something.
Yeah, hold on one second. Did anyone hear? This happened yesterday. It was evidently in a court in Georgia, but it only came out public today. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Darrell Glanville recused the entire judicial bench in Fulton County from hearing Trump's motion to disqualify Fulton County District Attorney Bonnie T. Willis. And he said, and her office from further probing Trump. Notion also calls for throwing out evidence in a final report gathered by the special grand jury that investigated the case.
Wow.
Now, I deal with someone else who's been in the law and kind of around this stuff, and he said this order will not fly. But this is something that I haven't heard widely reported yet.
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, as sitting here hearing this just now, that's about as close to the legal death penalty as I think you can get when it comes to something to that particular area.
I'll drop what I read from in the thing so people else can see it.
Okay, because I was about to go look and it would be easy.
What was the source?
I am not particularly sure, but the person it came from is fairly reliable in terms of their sources. They don't go for sketchy stuff, so I'm believing he found it somewhere good.
Well, if you put the link in, I'll have a look, and I'm sure others will.
It's not
will
a link. It's just a photo of what's just a photo of the statement.
Hmm. Oh, by the way, back to Buttermilk for a minute. Asa, Brother Deacon Asa, thanks for getting my back. I stayed out of a lot of the conversation, but come on, one must be brain damaged to not like Buttermilk. And that Greenbrier butter you're talking about, fuck me, I'd crawl across ground glass for a funky butter with some sour notes. God damn, slather some on some warm sourdough and Robin Girardi.
There's the link. I found it from Twitter.
Okay. I was tickled pink when there is a very, very bougie food city down in Kingsport, Tennessee, and their sourdough is every bit as good as Publix, and I brought some home, and it's heavenly. Let's see. Mention she Fulton. Huh. That sounds sketchy as hell.
I was like, I'm reading this and I'm thinking, all I see is an allusion to something on Fox 5 in Atlanta and something to 11 Alive News.
Well, here's a, but on, over on Twitter, here's a link to a Washington Post story, if it will open for me.
Send it to me. I actually, oh, wait, no, I didn't.
Attorneys for former president, let me check the dateline. July 21st, really, I've got a lift now? July 21st, Dateline Atlanta, Washington Post. Attorneys for former President Donald Trump continued their last-minute push to block an Atlanta-area investigation into whether he and his allies broke the law when they sought to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss in Georgia, a motion that will now be decided by a judge based outside Fulton County. In an order issued Thursday but made public Friday, Fulton County Superior, that's what Jeremy just had. Glanville, the chief judge in Fulton County Superior Court, reassigned the case to Georgia's 7th Judicial Administrative District for the appointment of a judge who is not a member of the district to preside over the case. Oh, for God's sake. Talk about home cooking. I know where the 7th Judicial District is. Because I've been there. That court, based in Cartersville, Georgia, which is right up I-75 from Atlanta.
Oversee- You're Marge.
Hi, Steve. Soup. Beat you to it. Yeah. Oversees 14 counties in northwest Georgia, through the though the order suggests any future hearings could still occur in Atlanta. Cartersville, Georgia is also, and once she listens to this, she'll know. Cartersville, Georgia.
District. I'm almost certain.
Portion of it probably is, but the other thing is, it's also, and Chris in Germany will remember when we went down for the Molloy Mountain getaway in December of, I can't remember, December of 2018, maybe?
I was there.
Yeah, was it December 2018?
I think so.
We toured parts of Georgia, and I took Chris, and Annette was with me. And we went to Etowah Mounds. You ever been there, Steve?
Probably.
It's a city. It's an ancient indigenous
Etowah
city.
Mound. I'll be damned.
And the Etowah River runs right by it. It's absolutely beautiful. You can see why you'd want to put a. And you can see when you go to the when you climb to the top of the biggest mound, which is actually a pyramid. You can see the mountains of northeast Alabama. From there. So you've got a hell of a field of vision. And there's a giant ball court at the foot of the pyramid where they would play. Oh, I can't remember. It's the Muskogee word. Chalky or Chucky or something like that.
I sent you the order just now.
Oh, okay,
just
cool.
Just checked with Karen. Somerville, Cartersville, that's Marge's district. So I'm not speaking out of turn or spreading disinformation, I do not think. So for what it's worth, you know, that's the mentality you got up there.
So some home cooking.
Yeah, so if the judges are of like minds with Marge, Jesus, here we go, man. Here we go.
I wonder if this is... Steve, you're probably more familiar, but I wonder if this is appealable.
That's the other Steve's wheelhouse, not mine.
Oh my God. Read the footnote here, Robin.
Yeah, I did. The undersigned notes that although the petition is styled as a petition for writs of mandamus and prohibition, the nature of the relief requested is that this court, one, quash a special purpose grand jury report, two, bar the district attorney from using evidence obtained via the special purpose grand jury investigation, and three, disqualify the district attorney for conflict of interest, none of which actually appears to sound in mandamus.
Steve, that's obscene, man. Help us out, friend. Jesus, man.
I'm finding this almost weird because no, because it doesn't have the It honestly doesn't have the feel of an order. It has a feel. I know this sounds crazy, almost as a, because he says should, and it.
Why would they interject it in the most tooliest section of Georgia, too? You know, I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out.
And here's their other weird thing. This came out yesterday, because the date of the order is the 20th. Something doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, there's something fishy about this that Larrapin mustard dill sauce will not cover up.
Yeah,
and circling back to Robin's question earlier, is this objectionable, Steve?
Appealable.
Challenge. Appealable. Yes.
Because hasn't the Georgia Supreme Court already ruled on this? How is that not res judicata?
What I don't understand is it's appearing in some strangely obscure places.
I mean, it's decidedly weird.
Because here's I'm just looking at something that says from MSNBC News, Team Trump tries and fails to derail Fannie Willis probe in Georgia.
So if they
and according to the Washington Post story, this was one of those really, really Looney Tunes filings. It was 650 pages.
So if they decide that is a jury of Trump's peers up in that section of Georgia,
put that aside. Put that aside.
This is not a jury trial, Steve.
No, okay. This is.
All right, I apologize.
No, you need not apologize. This is not a jury trial issue. This is a.
It's confusing. You know.
This is a request that the court rule on issues specifically of law. The order came as Trump's attorneys filed an amended motion to disqualify Willis and quash the special grand jury filings, a 650-page filing that accused Willis in part of fundraising for her re-election campaign on the back of this case. Well, that's an ethics complaint.
This doesn't
been approved,
I mean, I'm looking at this MSNBC story. It says Georgia Supreme... NBC News reported the efforts flopped spectacularly. Quote, and this isn't obviously from the Supreme Court opinion. Georgia Supreme Court on Monday denied Trump's bid to halt the Fulton County District Attorney's probe into whether the former president and his allies interfered in the state's 2020 presidential election. The petition sought to disqualify Willis from investigating Trump and to quash a report from the grand jury she used to help her investigation. The 9-member state high court in unanimous ruling concluded that what Trump is seeking is not the sort of relief that this court affords, at least absent extraordinary circumstances that petitioner has not shown present here. Moreover, even if the petition were procedurally appropriate, petitioner has not shown that he would be entitled to the relief he seeks. And this order here seems completely
Well, I mean, what's getting me is why not the judge, by the way, his name is Ural Glanville.
Ural Glanville.
This is U-R-A-L.
This almost, has the feel of
it's parody almost.
Oh, he sounds like the Herman Gwynn character from My Cousin Vinny. These two whats, counselor? Utes. These two Utes.
So Fannie is disqualified under what grounds? That she campaigned?
No, she's
effort?
Not. It doesn't disqualify her.
No, it's her. Not her. It's the entire fucking county.
He's disqualified the entire Fulton County bench.
Jesus.
And sent it up to Cartersville.
In Marge's district, we all know how they vote. I mean, Jesus.
But the thing is, why didn't Ural Glanville, whatever, his honor, why didn't he just look at the Supreme Court of Georgia's opinion, which is vastly superior to his on exactly the same topic and say, this has already been addressed. Take it up with the Supreme Court again if you want, but this is beyond my... Because, see, there's a little trick, and I know Stephen New York knows it, and I know Billable Rick knows it. It's not really a trick, it's just a rule. Jurisdiction is always subject to challenge. Does that jibe with you, Steve?
Oh, yeah.
You can always raise the issue of whether the court has jurisdiction.
Well, no, that's well always. I would say always no. There are certain jurisdictional defenses that are waivable and certain ones that aren't. You know, personal jurisdiction is waivable.
But Ural Granville could have just as easily have said, "Hey, the Georgia Supreme Court's ruled on that. I have no jurisdiction to hear this, and neither does any other judge in the state of Georgia." Motion denied. Because it's already been denied. And I mean, principles of res judicata say that they're just coming back for a second bite of the apple that they're not allowed to have. Or am I just reading this entirely nutso?
No, this doesn't sound real.
But it is.
I'm not so sure.
If this was out of the busted knuckle Georgia morning glory of freedom and volcano of truth, sure, I'd say, yeah, no, this is the Washington Post doesn't publish this shit unless they've got it.
He's a real superior judge, and he's African American. I just posted a link to his bio.
But the thing is, the motion has been pending before Fulton County Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney since March. Nitwit Nero's attorneys went after him too, because he oversaw the special grand jury, and they say that the special grand jury was conducted under an unconstitutional statute and, quote, through an illegal and unconstitutional process that violated Trump's due process rights. This is spaghetti being, well, with ketchup, being thrown at the wall. I mean, is there some other way to read this than this is just another cockamamie act of desperation? And so, but it is a mess because the Washington Post article continues to note that Judge McBurney impaneled two criminal grand juries last week, and one of them's likely to hear the case against Nitwit Nero. And they're saying that the grand jury was improperly impaneled because McBurney hadn't ruled on this dipshit motion that's already been decided by the Supreme Court of Georgia. I mean, that's the thing that's driving me bananas. And that's why I asked the question I did. Is it appealable? Because it seems like what you do is you take that stupid motion and the stupid order by the judge and you put it with the Georgia Supreme Court ruling and take it up to the Georgia Supreme Court on a writ of prohibition. I'll see you read a prohibition and give you and raise you a writ of prohibition. Do we need to explain extraordinary writs, Steve?
Hold on a sec. I think this is fake. What was his name? Anal what?
Euro.
I think this is fake.
Fulton County Superior Court, e-filed, QW, blueprint, date 7-20-23, 12:07 p.m., Che Alexander Clerk. Case number 2023 CV382670. Ural Glanville, and it's CC'd to the administrator of the 7th Judicial District, the administrator of the 5th Judicial District, the clerk of the Superior Court of Fulton County, and the administrative judge of the 7th Judicial Administrative District. It's real, Steve. It's just real stupid.
I don't agree. I don't think it is real.
What tells you that it's not?
It's not on any court website.
Could that be a lag? Could that be some sort of filing latency?
Because
what's the date stamp on the e-file?
You can fake it. This is all Photoshoppable.
Well, whoever would do something like that is
stupid. Yes,
has a real desire to see the inside of a Georgia penitentiary. And not in the just visiting square. I think it's real. It's just real dumb.
But it doesn't appear any. It appears in one legitimate place, and that, well, I use legitimate in air quotes, the Post.
Ralph sent me the Fox News 5 article. Here's the bio on. Thank you, Ralph. Here's the bio.
Oh, it's a real judge. I don't deny that.
And I mean the guy's got a CV, Brigadier General, Chief Judge, United States Army Court of Criminal Appeals.
The other thing too is I would have thought there would have been some sort of press release from Fonnie Willis.
And the Post article says that her office declined to comment. And the ruling on Monday was unanimous from the Supreme Court of Georgia. 9-0.
Supreme Court
makes no showing that he has been prevented fair access to the ordinary channels, they said. His legal filing lacked the facts or the law necessary to mandate Willis's disqualification by this court at this time on this record. This sounds like something that was cooked up in the beginning by counsel for a parking garage. And these are the kind of desperate filings that guilty people make.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this would be a deep fake of epic proportions if you're right.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I found it at the Fulton County Clerk website. So, oh. Huh.
Che Alexander, clerk.
I'm not convinced that this is actually still not, because it's Fulton County, it's fultonclerk.org.
There are a lot of states that don't have .gov extensions. And it's a real problem because they're much more easily hacked, which goes to your theory. It's bizarre. I don't quite know what to make of it.
What I find really weird is there, if you look at the Fulton County website, there's nothing, you don't have the judges listed, you don't have anything like that listed. This is, and there was an article that I saw, and it was behind a paywall at Law 360, which is a really good saying that it doesn't say what people think it says. That's this, as far as I could get.
I don't understand. And my not understanding something is not an indication of something being incomprehensible. But it sounds like it's kind of weird to you too.
It's absolutely weird.
And in furtherance of your theory, Steve, Clarence writing in, subject line, Fulton County, I follow Glenn Kirshner and Brian Tyler Cohen on YouTube. They would put this on blast. So far, nothing from them.
That's what I mean.
Wait. I mean, it just... It's Chewbacca all over again. Don't make no sense. But do we really expect things to make sense that are coming from that gang of... pettifoggers and losers? I kind of want to move on and deal with something vapid and stupid. Because we got 20 minutes left in the program. We got $49 to go to be fully funded for last week, which is a huge leap forward considering where we were at the beginning of this week. We're basically living a week behind now. But we are fully funded for last week except for $49. If that rolled in, it would be a bit of a victory. And I don't have to sweat quite so hard going down to Tennistan again.
Probably after 50, Robin.
Oh, Ken, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, we're actually at $1 into Last More and Monday. Thank you, Ken. That's amazing. If we finished off More and Monday, that would be like we'd be verging on miracle territory. Because that would mean, well, let's see, we're at $14.99. We wipe out Moran Monday, and we're down to $1,100.
And I hate mustard, by the way.
this is a mustard hating bunch. I like mustard.
I love mustards.
I mean, I understand not being impressed with the yellow stuff. The bright yellow stuff. But, oh my heavens, a good mustard.
Mm. Oh, the old German beer mustards, man.
Yes, yes. You know what? Where we were for the Molloy Mountain getaway that December?
In Helen?
Yeah, I bet you. Ooh, I bet you there's some good mustard to be found there.
Oh, there is. I stock up on it every time I'm up there. Yes, got a cupboard full of it.
In former years, I used to receive a care package, and the person in charge of sending it knows who he is. And I did not know that the German word for mustard is Zeft, or Seft, S-E-F-T. but they sell it in toothpaste tubes in Germany. And, yeah. Oh, my God, is it good. That sweet, hot German mustard on a brat, shoot me. It's just heaven. Just lovely.
Now, Robin, how do you get to the Tennessee area? Do you go 77 to 81 and head in that way?
Because it's just barely south of Bristol where I go.
I know. I'm very familiar with that area. If I don't know. It may cost you. I don't know if you have any expendable time, but if you ever wanted to get up to at the Abington area, Abington's a neat little town. It's where the Martha Washington Inn. That's a neat little town, and it really doesn't slow you down that much. You get on 19, you just that'll take you right into Bristol.
Well, I mean, there are exits for it all along. There's like two or three exits for it on 81. Okay, cute Abington story. The first time my daughter-in-law went down through there, and we laugh about it now every time we go down, because words can be pronounced differently.
Yep.
And she saw the sign and went, Abingdon.
Abingdon.
And so, you know, we see the sign now and we laugh merrily and say, Abingdon, because apparently it's like continuing a thing in my family, Steve, because back when I was a kid, my father would deliberately drive my older sister a little bit crazy because, you know, there's a place in Kentucky called Versailles. In La Belle France, they would say Versailles or something close to that. But since it's Kentucky, they call it Versailles, which my father then retranslated as Versailles. And so in that generation, we had Versailles, and in this generation, we have Abingdon, which I think is a perfectly cute way to pronounce it.
It works for me. But if you ever got time to take in some scenery, that's a nice way to go. You'll see some beautiful homes, and it's just, you know, it's like a throwback.
You know where I'd really love to go? Big Stone Gap, Virginia.
Oh, man, that's near Pennington Gap, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the home of the outdoor drama of Trail of the Lonesome Pine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably going on even now, and I would love to take it in.
Because that's beautiful country, too, man.
Well, really it was. It was.
I hadn't been there in a while, so I
45% of Wise County, Virginia is now gone.
Now.
Because the coal companies blew it all to hell.
Like Russell County.
And there's that Trail of the Lonesome Pine outdoor drama was a very popular early 20th century novel by a brilliant writer, really, named John Fox Jr. And he details the boom and bust of the rise of that whole area in the midst of an absolutely charming romance that has a couple of problematic aspects. But maybe it wasn't problematic for the time. All about the interaction of an educated young man going into the deep into the hills. He's an engineer, and he's in search of coal. And he and Fox writes about what the coal economy did to the area. And lo and behold, here we are 100-plus years later, and coal has further devastated that entire region. But, God, the parts of it that are still intact are absolutely drop-dead beautiful, Steve.
Oh, yeah, I would believe it. It's been a long time since I've been in that neck of the woods, but from what I can remember, it was stunning, say the least.
And Hungry Mother State Park is down around there somewhere, and that's beautiful.
Yep.
And then you hop across the Kentucky line, and there's Kingdom Come State Park, which is, I mean, deep Appalachian, exquisite beauty. Also named after a John Fox Jr. novel, Little Shepherd of Kingdom Come.
Once fur gets settled in and you got time just to poke around, I mean, it might be worth revisiting some of these places.
Oh, I think it would be. And I really want to go and see Trail of the Lonesome Pine. That was the first grown-up novel I ever read when I was like 8 or 9 years old.
Hey, everybody.
Hey. By the way, Ralph says, I tried looking at Democratic Underground and on YouTube and came up with nothing about the Georgia ruling. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice, you know?
Hey, I think I have an insight into this order.
Oh, well, please, Billable, go for it.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to stand, but I believe what the Supreme Court ruled on was Trump was trying to disqualify the Fulton County DA from being able to handle the case on the grounds of bias. What this latest filing is relates to disqualifying the entire bench in Fulton County, all the judges in Fulton County, so that no single judge could hear it. I don't know. So there are different motions, than what was heard by the Georgia Supreme Court. What could happen is you could have a judge from that county, basically go into Fulton County and preside over a trial. I don't really know exactly, how that would work. It sounds like the grand juries are already impaneled.
They are.
And grand juries work only, they work loosely under the authority of the court. I mean, only for the purpose of getting them impaneled. Once they're in place, they're pretty much an independent agent, the grand jury is. It's not really part of the judicial branch, nor is it really part of the, executive or prosecutorial folks. So,
right. I mean, that is theoretically the grounding of the grand jury, that it acts with complete independence.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's quite possible you could have a judge imported from outside of Fulton County, but you'd have the case, the grand jury impaneled in Fulton County. They would be the ones to decide the indictment. They would be the ones to actually, if there's a jury trial, it would be drawn from Fulton County, not the other counties. But you'd have a judge from outside of Fulton County handling the proceedings. I don't really know.
I think the analysis you're offering up, Billable, is solid. There was an indication in the Washington Post article that I read that said that the proceedings would continue in Fulton County, just as you said. I think this is where the pettifoggers are trying to go. I think they're trying to work a sort of by analogy, a fruit of the poisonous tree argument.
Okay.
Meaning that if they can get the judges disqualified, then the grand jury would be tainted by virtue of having been impaneled by a banned judge.
Well,
but that's a real reach.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah, it's a stretch.
I've been looking at this very closely, and this is where lawyers kind of start. What it says, this doesn't strike me. I don't think it's saying what people think it's saying. Because here's what it says. It says all active judges of the county should be recused, number one. Number two, it says it is assigned to the 7th Judicial Administrative District for the appointment of a judge who is not a member of the district.
Okay, hold on. So, I think I see where you're going.
And then the other thing says the assigned judge may contact, and it has a person there to arrange courtroom space if needed at the Fulton County Superior Court.
Right.
Okay.
Let me guess, the combination of that language tells me that somebody in Cartersville is going to appoint a Fulton County judge who is on senior status.
Bingo.
Oh, there you go.
I don't think it actually, to be frank with you, I don't think this really actually changes anything. And the other thing too, if it really did, we would have heard the Trump fuckers all over the place.
They would have been shouting it from the rooftops. And then again, we don't tune in Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, so we don't know that they aren't.
If I could tell you a quick story, there was I don't know if y'all remember, at the turn of the century, last century, there was an attempt of terrorists to sneak across, I guess, the Canadian border into Washington to bomb targets in Washington state. They were the Millennial Bombers. I don't know if you remember anything about that. And the entire judiciary in the Seattle area was recused from hearing that case for some reason. And the case was tried by a judge in Los Angeles. They had that, they actually had the trial down in Los Angeles, which is kind of weird. And yeah, he eventually got convicted of that. I think about a 20-year term or something like that. And there were later proceedings where he got the term slightly reduced, the sentence. But, you know, that sort of thing can happen. It's unusual. But, you know, the judiciary of an entire, you know, district can get, you know, recused.
Hey, and one other thing, Robin, in the order, I don't see what the footnote refers to. Oh, there it is. Never mind.
Oh, and just shifting gears for a moment, another member of the Kennedy family has spoken out against rotted FK. Jack Schlossberg, cousin to RFK, rotted FK, and grandson of John F. Kennedy, said, "I've listened to him. I know him. I have any idea why anyone thinks he should be president. What I do know is his candidacy is an embarrassment." So Jack Schlossberg's voice is added to that of Joe Kennedy III and Kerry Kennedy. How gross. But I did, in the remaining minutes here, because, you know, it's one of those little cultural shitstorms, we have to talk about this. I'm just going to say two words. Jason Aldean. Anybody else following this silliness? He's a country music star, and he's got a song out called "Try That in a Small Town." And it was shot on the steps of a courthouse where a lynching took place last century.
Well, read a book? Is that what he's talking about?
Yeah. No. Wait a minute.
There were many lynchings there, Robin, not just one.
Yeah. And so, by the way, if you'd like to go to a Jason Aldean concert, Billable, I encourage you so to do.
Well, you know, if somebody's willing to pay for the tickets, I'll go.
Just, you know, take your magic with you.
There you go.
But the song's it's a revenge fantasy, because we've talked about this in the past before. These little, there's a good dollar to be had in especially country music, talking about how shitty it is to live in a city and how the real good people live in small towns. And so it's a nasty ass lyric about violence and vigilantism. And the video's real sketchy, and CMT pulled it off of their rotation. They're not going to play the video. And Jason Aldean got all butthurt about it
and said, "I'm just trying to celebrate the small town values I grew up with."
Of course, the fucker showed up in blackface, I think, at a Halloween party in 2015. He's married to a maggot influencer who's real mouthy about it. And the ultimate hilarity out of it is that the damn fool, Stephen Georgia Stan, you are our Georgia expert, is making Georgia a small town. I'm guessing the answer is no. I've been to Macon, Georgia. I mean, Plains, Georgia is a small town. Macon, Georgia is a city. So Jason Aldean's full of bullshit on that to begin with. Here's the funny part, though. He's acting like he wrote the song. It's racist as shit.
And you are right with your assessment.
Thank you.
Spot on.
And he did not write the song. They're not even his own words. He wasn't in the room when the song was written. All he did was record it when his producer handed it to him. And so one of my favorite artists, Jason Isbell, burnt him to the ground and said, "In my small town, we write our own songs. Why don't you try that, Jason Aldean?" Because Jason Isbell is a consummate songwriter, brilliant songwriter. His latest album, Weather Vanes, is amazing. And I can't stop listening to If You Insist. I just love it. So there we have covered the Jason Aldean kerfuffle.
Hey, Robin?
Yes.
Okay, I actually got access to the online court docket where this comes from. Here's the weird thing. The order, the time of the order is 12:07 p.m. That 650-page filing is 1:21 p.m. So it looks to me like...
But the 650-page filing is from March.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Maybe that's something different than... No. The original petition was July. So the amended complaint is the 650. Hold on a sec. The first one was 23 pages. Unfortunately, you can't just download these. You have to purchase them. But yeah, it was the first one was plaintiff's original petition was July 14th. Affidavit, they sued a judge, or they petitioned a judge, and they petitioned the respondent is Willis and Robert McBurney. I don't know who that's a judge. I don't know who it is.
He's the judge who oversaw the special grand jury.
Gotcha. But the order of recusal came out. Here's the funny thing. And again, if I'm getting too much in the weeds for the program, I'll.
You're good.
Okay. You have. It's styled a petition, in the original thing. And if you remember the footnote, in the footnote of the order, the judge basically says, petitioner has styled this a mandamus, blah 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 blah. And in that footnote, it says that's not what this is. Now, in the original filing, it says a petition for writs of mandamus and prohibition, and the judge said that's not what this is. You're calling it something that's not. Okay. Even though they filed it under a complaint, because they're stupid, it's an amended petition. But that amended petition is in response to the order. So that decision is not on the original petition. The decision is on the original petition, not on the amended 650-page one. The original petition is 23 pages. So let's take an inventory here. We have an original petition from July 14th. We have an order, which of course, Fox News reported this way, as he recused all judges in Fulton County. It doesn't actually say that, and I know all those pesky people who read shit. It doesn't say that. As we talked about a few minutes ago, number one, it says all active judges. Number two, it says you cannot appoint a judge from the 7th Judicial Administrative District. It's assigned to that district to appoint a judge from the 5th Judicial District, and it's going to be they're going to hear it in the 5th Judicial District. Frankly, I don't see what this does, how this actually affects anything. Does anybody, do you, Robin?
I can see where it could.
I could see where it could, but I don't think it's near what people, when Jeremy posted it, I don't think it's and please understand this is not a dig at Jeremy or his friend who gave it to him. I don't think this says near what some people may be reporting it as. In the words of in your words of whether or not the U.S. is a democracy, I think the interpretation is aspirational as opposed to
operational.
I don't, you know, it. And what it says is that they have to appoint a judge who's not in the 7th Judicial District, and it's not even going to be held or heard in the 7th Judicial District. It's going to stand Fulton County. It's got to be it can't be a 7th Judicial Administrative District judge. So it's a judge from anywhere else, I guess. But let's be honest here. And here's why this administrative judge did what he did. Here's why he granted their order their petition without really granting it. He said, "Fine, you can appoint somebody from anywhere else, but it can't be the only thing it can't be is an active judge in Fulton County. But it's going to continue to be heard here in Fulton County. So if you want to get a judge from somewhere downstate, they got to come here for the case." That's how I read this, which is like the administrative judge Ural, whatever his name is, he's actually a general in, I think, in the National Guard or something.
He's been counsel for fucking NATO, I think.
Yeah. So I think what this guy did was, and you know, not to be cynical, but in a good way, he basically said, okay, fine, they're all recused, but only the active judges are. And fine, someone from another district gets to appoint the judge, but whoever the judge is, they have to come here. Which, you know, what that's going to have the effect of doing is people in other districts are going to say, I don't want to drive clear down there for the fucking thing. And the reason he then said active judges is that leaves it wide open for somebody to appoint a retired judge, an emeritus judge.
Inactive status.
Inactive status. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm being all over the place here, but that's what it sounds like to me.
Pardon me a bit. It sounds like Rick's trying to get in.
Rick.
That's okay. I was just going to say, I'm just looking at the spots.
Rick, I can hardly hear you. Are you on?
Yeah. Oh, here, hold on. Chris. Let me get the speaker closer. This is a Fox 5 news article, and all it is, this is a civil case that Trump filed against the DA and I think
and the judge.
The presiding judge.
Yeah, to quash the grand jury report and disqualify the DA. And what happened is I think the presiding judge, McBurney, ignored the request. And I think for that reason, that's why Ural decided to, make the order that he made, just basically to get it out of McBurney's hands and have it be decided by somebody who doesn't have an interest in vindicating McBurney, let's say, for example. And that's why they're looking for a judge, either a non-active judge out of the Fulton County or a judge out of the 7th Judicial District or whatever that is. So I think that's what's going on. It's just a civil suit to basically, for special relief, they're requesting.
And the judge Ural said, well, this isn't actually you didn't actually ask what you are.
He said it doesn't sound in mandamus, but the original petition was in mandamus and prohibition, so he was saying the mandamus part of it's probably garbage. In other words, he's telegraphing his opinion to the dude up in the 7th Judicial Circuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's one of those things where just because you call it a pig and it's clearly a parrot doesn't make it a pig.
Right. Or in this case, a skunk. we're into overtime now. I wanted to thank Jude. Jude sent me a note and said no roomy words tonight, yet donating this evening to Tracy with her birthday remembrance, Joey for his disciplined written piece, all on the front porch. Those out there in the ether, and you, dear Robin, every little bit helps. Wink emoji inserted here. Keep on keeping on. Thank you, dear Jude. And Jude said in regard to the Jason Aldean stuff, it is shocking in its nature as it presents a Western Hollywood glam shot. It reminded me of BLM's moment several summers back during turbulent times. What I sensed was that Jason, a country singer, revealed a clear division by challenging why hundreds of thousands of us were out in our streets, the murder of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer. I hope this makes sense. It does. It does. It's all about the resentment coin that you can make off of the maggots. And it goes to so much of the so-called culture wars right now, because with all the marginalized communities, there's very little money in it. But you can always separate a maggot from their money, make no mistake. And they're fairly queuing up and begging to be relieved of it. I want to say one last thing before we close the program. And this isn't mainly about, you know, rotted FK. But I love it when I write about things. I just do.
He went off the rails, man.
He did. And yesterday when we were talking about rotted FK, I said, gee, I wonder if Donnie Deutsch will be on my filthy morning habit in the morning with his brand up and brand down. And lo and behold, there was Donnie Deutsch this morning. And I swear I'm gonna play the clip, not because Joe is right. I mean, Joe's right, but the thing is, he's saying the same thing I said on the program yesterday. Hi, producer. Hi, writer over at Morning Joe. Love you guys. Have a little shout out once in a while. Girl's going broke here. well, I love that wicked little laugh.
Robin, let me give a shout out to Jude. She called two or three nights ago, and I was buried knee deep with the client. And Karen took the call, and they had a delightful conversation. And
well, how sweet.
Just want to let her know how much I appreciate her reaching out, and I regret that I wasn't able to take the call.
I understand completely. Yes, and I'm sure she does as well. You, my friend, are the hardest working man in the adjusting business.
I was thinking the exact same thing. Steve,
well, it's that, and I'm trying to take care of my mom too. So, there's not enough to go around.
You've got a lot of plates spinning on a lot of sticks, my friend.
Yep. But I just wanted to say thanks to Jude and Robin. I wanted to let you know that, you know, I'm still here. I haven't disappeared. You know,
we miss you. We miss you when you're gone.
I miss everybody too. And it's like I was telling Ace, the best I can do right now is to prep for the porch. And hopefully when Karen's retirement gets settled, right now she's not getting any benefits from retirement. It takes 3 months. That's how backward ass the post office is for them.
Holy crap.
Yeah. So I have to make up, you know, this gap in our income, and that's what I'm doing.
And so, will there? I mean, I'm not being nosy about your finances. I'm just, I'm curious administratively. Will there be 3 months of back pay?
Yes, ma'am. There will be retroactive back pay, which sounds great until you get it, you know. But until then, you know.
And of course, it gets the shit taxed out of it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Uncle Sam, he'll be there with his hand out. So come next year. But that's not why I'm tabling all this. I'm just letting you know why I've been so scared.
No, I understand completely. I do. I truly do.
Thanks for your understanding.
And I always love your input on the program, Steve. I think you know that.
And hopefully by the holidays, everything will be back to normal. I'll be able to pod every day like I used to, but right now it's not possible.
I understand, and I appreciate everything that you do, and I appreciate Roger being there because Roger's busier than a one-arm paper hanger, and wow, that's probably no longer acceptable. I apologize for that right now.
That's okay. I don't know why they make it so difficult for government workers to retire, though. I don't know. We're in the electronic age where everything should happen in real time, but it does not work like that.
Oh, no. And by the way, Jude just wrote in, Steve, and said, when I think of Steve, I always sense Karen. So, really, you were with us. That's sweet, Jude. Thank you. And
she's good people, man.
She is. She's the Horn spiritual advisor.
Yep.
Randy Radar says, RFK's conspiracy theories have some merit, but then he takes a hard right turn and corkscrews into the dirt. I don't know which part of his conspiracy theories have any merit. I have not found one yet. I mean, he's right. He's right about some of the scientifically grounded stuff, some of the geologically grounded stuff when he was inveighing against mountaintop removal. That was true. But those were not his theories. He was just bogarting them from people on the ground in the grassroots who were doing the hard work, and then he just helicoptered in and rode our hillbilly backs. That's all. There's a scene in The Last Mountain where he says, and we're going to talk to President Obama about getting a wind farm on Coal River Mountain. He didn't do shit.
That fucking prick.
I mean, that's all there is to it. But I do, before we wind up, and again, thank you, Ken, for getting us started on Moran Monday. So we actually started on this week before the week was over. That's tremendous. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ken. I want to play this clip from Morning Joe just because I get a little bit of gratification out of it. And, well, I'll take all I can get. So here we go.
Did not deserve the platform.
Now, wait a minute. Just wait and see if you, I mean, most of you probably heard yesterday's program. See if you hear the Robin part.
Did not deserve the platform Republicans gave him. Kennedy has a long history of making controversial comments, most recently coming under fire from members of his own family for pushing anti-Semitic tropes about COVID. Democratic Congressman Jerry Conway of Virginia gave an especially passionate rebuke of how the Republicans were using Kennedy for cynical political purposes.
I've been in this Congress 15 years.
We had
and
this
I never
clip
thought we'd descend
too.
To this level of Orwellian dystopia. Suddenly the tools of the trade are not to get at the truth, but to distract, distort, deflect, and dissemble. To disagree is censorship. To try to correct the facts is to infringe on my right of free speech. And no matter what you may think, Mr. Kennedy, and I revere your name, you're not here to propound your case for censorship. You are here for cynical reasons to be used politically by that side of the aisle to embarrass the current president of the United States, and you're an enabler in that effort today. And it brings shame on a storied name that I revere.
You know, Donnie, I I've known Bobby for a long time. I like him. Mm-hmm. I've always liked him.
What's He's going on, though?
Always been a good guy to me, and a smart guy. I remember maybe 20 years ago hearing him give an impassioned speech on the environment, and it was a really, really compelling speech. You get gifted orator. And I'm sure, just like, you know, the family members are at a loss about the anti-Semitic tropes that he's throwing out there, at a loss about one conspiracy theory after another. We're not going to give their names, but Mika and I were having a conversation with people who have been friends with the Kennedys for a very long time. And, you know, they love Bobby Jr. They love him. They love the whole family. And they say he's a very compelling guy, very gifted guy. He can pull you in. And they, too, are at a total loss about...
He is. He can convince you to let him eat off your plate at dinner on a lib boat cruise.
This guy being overtaken by one conspiracy theory after another, after another, after another. And I think for the family members who have sat by quietly all this time, I think the anti-Semitic trope about COVID being targeted genetically, I think that was the final straw. And of course, what Bobby always does is he throws something out there.
Here it is.
And then, like Trump, I can't believe I'm saying it, but like Trump, when he gets called out on it by the press, he goes, oh, no, I never said that. Mm-hmm. And then you go back and you look at the tape and you see he actually said that. And it's always framed in a way where he can pull back if it blows up in his face.
Lawyer weasel
words.
What's
the danger? What's the problem? The problem is he has set that anti-Semitic trope and that virus out online. And for all the conspiracy theorists that are following him, that takes root and it grows. And it's Jews who pay for that. It's Jews that pay for that, maybe by being shouted at and taunted on the streets. Maybe it's by having a rock thrown at the synagogue. Maybe it's by people going in and shooting up synagogues. I'm talking about just anti-Semitism in general, not about this specific anti-Semitic trope. I'm just saying, though, it is so reckless and irresponsible. And for people who've known Bobby for a long time, much better than me, in fact. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, you said the quiet part out loud. The parallels between Trump and Bobby Kennedy Jr. are kind of stunning. They're both very, very charismatic media figures that understand the media. As you said, they'll throw these grenades out and let them explode and then walk away and go, whoop, I didn't do anything. And he's taking the greatest family brand name in U.S. history, Kennedy, and dumping all over it. And it's just, you know, the Kennedys have had a lot of tragedies over the years, but I can't think of any greater blemish than what he's doing out there. And I think he's not well. I mean, I think there's something, you know, you can explain all you want, but for him to say, throw out the controversy he throws in this latest anti-Semitic trope, I think he's fallen and he can't get up. And I think there's something very wrong with Bobby Kennedy Jr. And going back to one of the earlier segments in the show, God forbid this lunatic decides to run as a third party and the damage that that would do. This is a very dangerous guy with a very storied name that is casting a dark shadow over it.
You know what would be really nauseating?
Very well said.
Yeah, it is. And I said the same thing about him. Oh, I didn't say that. You know, that's why I played the entire context last night. What Donnie Deutsch said, God forbid he runs as a third party. Well, right now he's running in the Democratic primary. I don't know that he could necessarily do that. But because sometimes I hate the way my brain works, can you imagine a guy who has inveighed against mountaintop removal for ages signing on as a running mate with Joe Manchin for no labels?
Very strong possibility that could be a reality.
Our pal Megan asked me the other day if I'd seen this business about Manchin and possibly running with No Labels. No Labels is funded by the way, Trump dark money. in case anybody's wondering.
Oh, absolutely. They want to be spoilers. That's their whole purpose.
Yeah, they want to
full stop.
They want to pull votes away from Biden in key mm-hmm. states. They don't even have to get on the ballot in all 50 states. They don't care to. Mm-mm. They're not going to be on the No Labels isn't going to be on the ballot in Alabama or Mississippi
or Maryland.
Right. But Megan asked me, and I said, listen, Joe is polling constantly, Manchin. And we have to, you know, we have to remember the first law of Manchin's that I discovered here. No one named Manchin ever does anything that doesn't benefit someone named Manchin. And so he's polling constantly, I suspect, and he's looking at his numbers. And if he gets close enough to this and he realizes he's going to lose his Senate seat to make West Virginia great big old current governor Jim Justice, then he will run. He'll run a third party spoiler campaign with his dear friend Joe Lieberman turning the wheels. Because No Labels, as I saw in an opinion piece earlier, No Labels is Joe Lieberman's revenge machine against the Democratic Party.
Give me a bucket, Joe Lieberman.
Heather Digby Parton at Salon said, there's no evidence that they're even remotely interested in getting a viable candidate elected. What they instead want to do is create political chaos and help Trump.
There's no chance they can win. None whatsoever. All they can do is be spoilers, and they know that.
Do you know what the big tell is? No, actually, I don't want to interrupt anybody.
No.
That's all right, Steve. You're not interrupting anything.
Here's the big tell.
Get closer to your mic, please.
Hey, a little
better?
Better, much.
Yeah, much better.
Do you know how much money they're raising?
Scads.
No, they're not. $70 million. Now, for us proles, that's a shitload of money. But if you're actually trying to run a campaign for president, that's nothing.
It's a pittance.
So what that tells and what that says is, right what Robin is saying, this is not about trying to run for president. This is about targeted chaos.
And putting Trump back in office in 2025.
Yeah. And we all know who the brains or actually it's Joe Lieberman is not the brains and the brawn behind this. It's Mark Penn.
Very likely.
And I don't know if he is. It's he's listed on like the on the website, all this stuff. He has said that he was. And if anybody know who Mark Penn is, first of all, he's a right winger. But if you go back to 2000, I don't know if it was 2016, but I think it might have been. He was chair of Hillary's campaign. Now I'm not denigrating her or the Clintons. What I'm saying is this is a guy who the party probably explicitly or not said, you know what, we really don't want you anymore. And he has complained that I don't like the left wing, the leftward tilt of the party. So I'm going to work to elect Donald Trump. This is nothing more than revenge porn for him and for Joe, Mr. Joe Mentum.
Yeah. What could possibly be their motivation in getting Donald Trump back in office, though? How does it benefit these people?
Because,
I don't get it, man.
Because they're making money.
And you know what, Steve? Just
but
remember
they're ruining democracy, though.
They don't care.
They don't give a fuck, Steve. I'm not yelling.
When you've got money, that none of that shit means anything to you. Because when you've got money, if shit goes to if the country goes to shit in a handpot,
everything goes off the rails. Yeah,
they don't care. I can just move.
And there is money to be made in the chaos.
Oh yeah, because in chaos they can steal.
They can steal. I was just going to cite Randy Rhodes, even though I don't listen to her anymore. That's exactly it.
And going back to Rotted FK, Jude asks, RFK Jr.'s time before the House, Jude asks, was that Dennis Kucinich sitting behind him? Any idea why? Yeah, Jude, that's Dennis Kucinich sitting behind him, and sitting back from Dennis is his wife, Elizabeth.
There's way more money slossing on their side than ours.
Sure. But yeah, that was, the reason that Dennis Kucinich and Elizabeth were there is because Dennis Kucinich has signed on as Rotted FK's campaign manager.
You got to be kidding me.
No, Steve, I'm not.
Somebody I had just mad respect for at one time has fallen to this depth.
Yeah, it's fucking sad.
Well, things happen to your brain when you go to work for Fox. Remember, after the 2010 census, Ohio's congressional delegation was condensed by one, and it occasioned a contest between Kucinich and his district in Cleveland, and I forget who the woman was, and he lost. And he wasn't particularly wealthy, so he took a job being a liberal commentator doormat for Fox. And Fox, as we know, pays very well. And if you sit there and you absorb that poison, even passively or even in disagreement, eventually it will hurt your mind. And it's just so sad. Now, I don't have as much sadness for Rotted FK, because he damn well knew what he was doing when he let the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, convince him to run. And you can only imagine what the conversation was. Look, there's going to be a lot of money in this. And look, if Trump gets back in office, you might be attorney general. Who knows?
God damn, Robin. That three-dimensional thinking Brandy Fears is goddamn impressive, man. I never even thought of that angle.
And even if you're not, you're going to make a shit ton of money. Because even though he's a Kennedy, Bobby's all about the money. Figured that out a good while back when he told some people who were fighting for their very lives and wanted his voice to add to theirs to save where they lived from a massive environmental disaster. He said, "I'll be right there as soon as the check for $30,000 clears." And I was told that by people in that affected community who were in communication with him. So I have no reason to disbelieve it. I mean, this is a guy who exploited an anniversary march commemorating the anniversary of the Battle of Blair Mountain. He exploited that to his own ends, came down here and tried to fuck his way through the women in the anti-mountaintop removal movement.
Plus, didn't he also say something to the effect of that, if he had something to do with it, we'd prosecute Fauci, you know?
He said that.
Crowd, but.
No, he definitely, he said that. He publicly said, we'll prosecute Anthony Fauci. And I was talking to someone else earlier today who speculated, and this is rank speculation, but from the looks of him, he's dosing testosterone hard. you know, and working out and trying to be buff at 68 years old.
Was that pun intended, Robin?
Not originally. He's okay. He's dosing testosterone soft. Is that better? Probably.
I don't think so.
And probably munching Viagra like M&Ms. But he's just gross. He's disgusting. And, you know, this is without any malice whatsoever. It's, like I said, it's sad to see someone be so exploitative. Right. You know, for him to have in this movie that he made and spread around inside the black community, trying to encourage black people not to get vaccinated, for him to compare the COVID vaccine, which was 17 years in development, for him to compare that with the Tuskegee experiment, and is so wrong, so utterly evil. Because the Tuskegee experiment, just real quick, because I got to get out of here. Podbean's going to hate me. The Tuskegee experiment was an experiment by which some black men with an STI, syphilis, I believe, were given treatments that would cure it, and others were left uncured. The viciousness was not that they were offered the cure. It's that some men were left to simply be ravaged by syphilis. And that's what makes the Tuskegee experiment evil and wrong. And that is nothing like, even remotely like, the COVID vaccine. But in the sick, twisted, capitalist, money-grubbing mind of Bobby Kennedy, he was willing to play that card. And just like the Tuskegee experiment, put black lives at risk. And that's just wrong. Everybody, I got to get out of here. I know Jude said, oh my God, wherever she is, I'm speechless about Kucinich. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, me too, Jude. Me as well. Robin, thanks for doing the overtime tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
I enjoyed your words of wisdom.
Well, I owed the community an hour from being late to air on Monday. I hope I'm not late to air on this coming Monday, but I will be coming home Monday from Tennessee. So.
Well, that's a hell of a schlep, man. I got to get your back on that.
Yeah, it's 3 hours. It's 3 hours. And it's
traffic,
it's,
you know.
The tolls are $10 because I have to come down the West Virginia Turnpike, $5 down, $5 back.
Well, please be safe.
Not complaining. Oh, I absolutely will. And like I said, this one's going to be bittersweet because I'm taking the babies with me and I'm coming back to a house without babies in it, and I've gotten rather used to them being here. I love them. And by the way, one note coming in, going all the way back to the mustard conversation, the things we do on this program. Cynthia in the Bay Area. Speaking of mustards, tomorrow I'm going to go to visit Dittmer's in Los Altos with a friend who lives in Palo Alto and has been shopping there for years. That sounds like a wonderful place. It's across the street from Chef Chew's, for anyone who might wonder where to find them and is somewhat familiar with the area. They have fine meats, sausages, and the like that you won't find in most other stores around here, including things like mustards. Last time there, I bought two mustards, both from Germany, one made by or named Alstertor, and the other made by Lohensenf. I haven't tried the Lohensenf yet, but the other one's sure good. We'll see what I pick up tomorrow, probably some sausages and sauerkraut and some other stuff. It'll be good, I'm sure. Cynthia, if you run across any sweet and sour pickled red cabbage, grab a jar, sis. Grab a jar. I can just open that stuff and eat it. I mean, oh, so good. And I'm not going there because it'll be another food porn segment, and I got to get out of here. Have a wonderful time, Cynthia. That sounds like an absolute blast. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for a partial miracle this evening. We will close the program down $1,499. And I'm so grateful to everybody who helped bring it down from 2,250. So very grateful. Means I can do some bill paying. Over the weekend, if you're listening to the program and you'd like to help out, golly gee, it sure would be nice. Maybe we could, a girl can dream, maybe we could get Moran Monday funded before the next Moran Monday starts, and that's just a matter of $299. And that would mean we would start Monday with an entire week not being unfunded. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, each and every one of you. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. I really did have to stop, get off the front porch because the battery is down to 11% on the iPad. I would hate to have it die in mid-program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast. Pretty please. I need to start inserting that in the program somewhere besides the beginning and the end because I know people fast forward. But please, like, subscribe, leave a comment. Thanks to those of you who do. I really appreciate it. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, the back porch, I presume, will continue after this program goes off the air. The conversation doesn't end. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if it's available to you. If you're around maggots, wear your mask because they don't give a damn about anyone, including themselves. Willing to die to prove their loyalty to a bunch of conspiracy theorists who don't give a goddamn about them. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance where possible. And, if Bobby Kennedy comes to, rotted FK comes towards you down the sidewalk, babbling about the Ashkenazi Jews, avoid him like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.